This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He's going to come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins. Touchdown, Buffalo! McCoy cuts to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive. This is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to the show on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon in Orchard Park, New York. John Murphy, Donald Jones here for the next 3 hours, talking Bills football and the NFL with you. Boy, what a beautiful day, Donald. This is the heart of the summer right now. It's beautiful out.
It is a beautiful day.
It's unbelievable.
It's 75, sunny. 77 and sunny, yeah. That's nice. I like 75 and sunny. I can do that every day.
Yeah.
You get up to 85, 90, 90, I don't like it. I'm staying in the house.
Well, we're getting there. We're getting close to training camp, and hopefully we get weather like this when we get to training camp. It's coming, folks, believe it or not. And for us, for the crew in the other room, it essentially means, I want to say the end of the summer, but certainly it means the end of the summer, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
And for the players, too. You went through
the players, yeah. As a player, it's like you know you have a good couple of weeks of summer. You know, you don't have the full summer like everybody else has. And I remember, like, so many of my friends and my son's birthday is in August. So many people would have events in August. And I'm like, yeah, I won't be there.
Yeah.
And they're like, you're never there. And I'm like, you know I work. I mean,
right.
You know, some of us have to actually work.
Right, which is why you get your vacation in before you go, and then you get ready for camp. And it is coming. It is 8 days from today. In other words, a week from tomorrow, we're going to be live with the first of our shows. I believe we've got 11 shows over a three-week span at the training camp. Going to be live right there, just overlooking Grounding Stadium. We were talking about it today and looking at the setup. And when you think about the training camp schedule with many of those practices, most of them anyway, 8:45 in the morning, they're going to be a sweet spot for us in terms of getting guests, you would think, right? Players off the field at 10:45. They got to walk right by us to get to the locker room. Hopefully we will commandeer some of those players and get them on the show.
They're going to be hiding from us.
Yeah. Well, they'll be running from us, some of them.
Yeah.
But we'll get them after practice so they won't be running too fast. But, yeah, we're looking forward to it. There are the ticketed practices, as you know, and information on how to get those tickets came out yesterday. It's up on our website, buffalobills.com. The first practice, 9 days away. That's 5:30 in the afternoon, so that will come after our second day of programming from St. John Fisher College. And we're going to talk about training camp over the next week and a half. We're going to have a countdown to training camp over the next week and a half. And right now it's 9 days away from the first Bills practice, 9 days away until the first training camp practice. Let's start today by talking about we're going to deal with issues, questions going into camp. And let's start with the defensive backfield. With major upheaval from a year ago, when you think about it, Aaron Williams is gone, Stephon Gilmore is gone, Nickell Robey-Coleman is gone, and some new faces back there. Training camp countdown question today. In this new makeup of the Buffalo Bills secondary, the defensive backfield, who is the key man? Who does this thing hinge on as far as success in the defensive backfield? Going to be some new faces back there, as we said. Micah Hyde comes over, a pretty highly paid free agent coming over from the Green Bay Packers. Tre'Davious White, first-round draft pick out of LSU, likely to be a starter. Ronald Darby comes back for his third year in the league. Many people looking for a bounce-back year from him. Jordan Poyer, penciled in as the starter at safety right now alongside Micah Hyde. New candidates anyway for nickel corner, including Leonard Johnson, the unrestricted free agent from Carolina. They get Colt Anderson back to play some backup safety after he missed most of last season. Kevon Seymour comes back for another year, his second year with the Bills, and likely to be a candidate for the defensive back, nickel at least, defensive back spot. If I miss anybody, there are others, obviously. Charles James, there are others who are going to be back there playing. Sharice Wright. But the point is, who's the key man? That's the issue we'd like to start with here today and the issue we want you to weigh in on. 9 days until the first training camp practice. This is our Twitter question as well. The countdown, the camp countdown question today, who is the key man, the most important man in the Bills' defensive backfield 9 days before camp begins? Pretty competitive race on Twitter. Micah Hyde, the new safety from Green Bay, about a little more than a third of you, 36% right now, say Micah Hyde is the key man in the Buffalo secondary. 33% say the third-year corner, Ronald Darby. So a third of you are looking for Ronald Darby to be the guy back there. 27% say the rookie first-round draft pick, Tre'Davious White. I mean, I guess stepping in for, you know, Stephon Gilmore, an accomplished NFL starter. 4% have somebody else in mind. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. The phone line's open, 803-0550, the number. Outside Buffalo, toll-free call, 1-888-552-550. Or you can weigh in on Twitter. I don't know where I would vote on this, Donald, because they're all important. I guess I'd go with Micah Hyde, where 36% of the respondents so far. But I think it's close. I think, obviously, Micah Hyde is an important part. I think Jordan Poyer, the other safety candidate, right now penciled into the starting lineup, is going to be an important guy in the defensive backfield. Obviously, the first-round pick, Tre'Davious White, likely to be the starter. A lot of people are going to be depending on him. And, of course, Ronald Darby, who comes back for his third year, first year without Gilmore on the other side. So, I don't know. I guess I'd vote for Micah Hyde, but this is, I think, worthy of some thought and consideration as far as identifying the number one guy in that defensive backfield. What
so
do you think?
I would say let's make a case for Micah Hyde. Micah Hyde, you talk about last year in the defense, and when they really started to have problems, it was when Aaron Williams was out of the lineup. And Aaron Williams, we all know, was the playmaking safety of the two that we had last year. Corey Graham was more the free safety type of guy in the back of the defense. The quarterback, people would say at the back end of the defense, Aaron Williams was down in the box, making plays, covering tight ends, covering slot receivers, and that's going to be Micah Hyde's job, I think, in this defense. You know, he's going to have to do a lot of different things. That's why they brought him in here, because of his positional flexibility. And so, yeah, I think he is probably the most important guy for this defense, a guy that can – he's going to be asked to do a lot of different things, and he's going to have to do them well. You know, and so I think, yeah, he is probably the most important part of the secondary.
He's had some good moments in his NFL career to date with the Green Bay Packers and some big plays. But this is a step forward for Micah Hyde, isn't it, to be considered maybe the keystone guy in a defensive backfield? I don't think the Packers ever relied on him to be that guy. And, in fact, they paid others in that defensive backfield and instead of Micah Hyde over the years. I mean, let's face it, they had an opportunity to keep him and could not afford to and decided they could afford to let him go with, you know, some of the salaries they had in that defensive backfield. But he's going to have to at least shoulder a bigger responsibility than he ever has in the NFL, right? Micah Hyde, he's never been the key guy in a secondary before, has he?
I don't know if he was the key guy in their secondary, but he was a guy who they had him doing a lot of different things.
Yeah.
You know, he would come down and cover slot receivers. He would go outside and cover the number one receiver. We all seen the video of him covering Golden Tate and catching it, and Golden Tate was their number one receiver and catching the interception out there. You know, so I think even though they didn't want to pay him like he was the number one guy, I think truthfully that coaching staff understood how important he was for that defense, and I think they would probably internally say Micah Hyde is probably our most important guy in the secondary because he can do so many different things.
You can make a case for some of the others, and we want to hear from some of our listeners and people on Twitter. Who is the key man in the Bills' defensive backfield? 9 days before camp, our camp countdown question deals with the Bills' defensive backfield. On Twitter, Richard Pierce tweets in, I'm worried about safety depth. If Hyde or Poyer go down, we could be in trouble. Valid point. It doesn't really address the question, but that's a valid point when you're looking at Cole Anderson coming off his injury. Primarily a special teamer, did get a chance to play a little bit last year. Shamil Gary is back there, and guys that, you know, are not only just not household names, but not guys who have really established themselves as NFL players yet, behind Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde. That's worth considering.
Yeah, I mean, the depth of this defense in general is in question right now. You know, you look across the board, but especially when you look at the safety position, That is a group where it's like, man, okay, you know you have the starting two, but who's behind them? You know, we just don't know that. We're going to have to find that out. And we need two of these guys really to step up in training camp and show, okay, this is a viable guy for you know, a backup role to the starting safeties. If those guys can't step up and show that, then they're going to have to go out there in the streets, which I'm sure they're going to be doing anyway, and try and find one or two guys out there that can come in here and really challenge for that backup role.
A couple of other tweets on this. Pete Rosen, when we asked the question, who's the key man in the Buffalo defensive backfield, Pete Rosen tweets in, Darby. Key meaning most important, he step up, not necessarily that he's the best. And that's important to point out. We're not asking you who's the best player in the defensive backfield. We're not asking you who you expect the most from, but who's the keystone? Who needs to play well in order for the Bills' defensive backfield to play well this year? Drew Jacks tweets in, Hyde is a huge upgrade at a position that struggled the past few years. Don't rule out Poyer also. He should provide needed athleticism at free safety. Has it been a struggle? I guess, you know, when Aaron Williams was healthy, I thought the Bills were he and Corey Graham a couple of years ago, I think, were
together,
pretty solid
yeah.
in the backfield.
When they were both on the field together, they were definitely two solid safeties in this league. Aaron Williams is one of the better safeties in this league. His ability, obviously coming over from the cornerback position and converting to safety, it still allowed him to come down and cover everybody, you know, and he was the type of guy who played reckless. You know, he wanted to come down. He would make plays in the run game. He could help out in any type of any part of the passing game. So, yeah, he was the playmaker, and Corey was the guy who was the quarterback. You know, he was the guy that got everybody in position where they were supposed to be. He could make plays all the way on the back end. He wasn't coming down in the box and helping out in the run like that, though, you know, but – one of these guys, and I would think Jordan Poyer is going to take the place of Corey Graham, and Micah Hyde is going to be, you know, take the place of Aaron Williams.
Always welcome to hear you on the telephone, 803-0550, and toll-free 1-888-552-550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Who's the key man in the Buffalo Bills defensive backfield? 9 days before training camp begins. Our show today, we're going to talk a lot about this. We're counting down the days to a training camp now, 9 days before the first training camp practice, 8 days until our first broadcast from St. John Fisher College. We're going to talk a little bit about the worth of training camp, Donald and I are, as mm-hmm. the afternoon goes along, as more and more teams keep their camps at home. I think we did the count this morning, 11 NFL teams out of 32 now, only 11 go offsite for their training camp. We'll talk about that as the show moves along. Steve Tasker will join us at 1 o'clock today in studio, the Bills special teams ace, the Wall of Famer from the NFL on CBS. Steve Tasker is scheduled to join us at 1 o'clock, spend an hour with us. And coming up at 2, we want to dive in a little bit more into the Carolina Panthers situation with Dave Gettleman, the general manager, being relieved, fired yesterday. We're going to talk with Jim Zocchi, who's part of the Carolina Panthers radio broadcast team. I'm fascinated by what appears to be kind of an evolving trend in the NFL as far as how they view general managers, what their yeah. role is. I think we saw it to a certain degree here with the dismissal of Doug Whaley back in late April, early May. And then since then, you've had a couple of other GMs lose their jobs, two GMs of fairly successful teams in recent years, the Chiefs and Carolina. Something's yeah. going on in the league. I want to talk to Jim Zocchi about it and
something,
talk about it with you.
Something is definitely going on in this league. You know, Doug Whaley was one story, but the other two, the guy out in Kansas City when he was fired was weird. And you're talking about a team that won their division last year, mm-hmm. you know, and a team that really still has the talent probably to challenge for the divisional race again this year, and I'm sure they want to, you know. So that was weird when they did that. And then this last one with Gettleman was just like, wow. You know, as we talk about the safety position and the safeties, we need depth. And I talk about, you know, we have to see what guys step up. That's why you have to see. This is why you need a GM. You can't fire your GM right now because he's the guy that has his pulse on everything that's going on around the league, who's on the bubble and all of that stuff all throughout camp. And so mm-hmm. he would be the guy, you know, along with his staff, that has to go out there and find the talent for every position, because, you know, every team has some depth problems at least one position, you know, and so it's weird that they fired him. And there is something going on. We heard about, you know, so many players yesterday tweeting out their issues with Gettleman, and maybe that was the real problem, but there's something weird going on with this.
We'll talk about
right
that
now.
As the afternoon goes along, and the timing. Some people yeah. think it might be the optimal time to fire a general manager. Well, we'll talk about that. Right now we want to start talking about defensive backs and the Buffalo Bills and who's the key guy. Who is the guy that has to hold it together? Who do they really need to come through with a big year in order to have success in the defensive backfield this year? The lines are open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show or vote in our Twitter poll. We'll start with a phone call from Mike in Rochester. Mike, go ahead. You're on the air.
I'm going to go with Micah Hyde. I had the displeasure of watching him on the Packers against I like the Seahawks. I think they picked off Russell Wilson about 10 times in the last two games. He's a huge part of that. He can man up. He can play the safety. You know, he can kind of do it all. And the only other thing that matters to me is to not – I love Darby, but they can't do what they did last year, putting him on an island constantly. It's not that type of league anymore. He's either going to get beat or a penalty. He might have perfect coverage. It might be a penalty. If they can keep those guys from, you know, being exposed and having to cover these guys one-on-one all game, hoping for a pass rush, I think they'll be very successful if they get away from that. And I'll take your guys' comments. Thanks.
Okay, thanks.
The one thing that he said there, you know, you're not going to ask your corners to cover one-on-one the entire game. And this defense, they're definitely not going to do that. But you will see some – we talked about, you know, the cover two and the zone principles that he came up with. They are going to run some men. You know,
yeah.
So he's going to be on an island. If you can't play man-to-man in this league, you can't play corner in this league. That's just point-blank period. You know, you won't be in a zone every down. So I don't think this is a defense where they're going to ask Darby all the time, look, we need you to cover the number one receiver all the time. But he will have to cover some man-to-man.
Yeah, and I want to get into that too because a couple of things. And Mike, thanks for your call. And, of course, everyone's welcome to call in at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Look, I know that's going to be a different defense. It will be more zone-based coverage than they had the last couple of years under Rex Ryan's defense. And you make an outstanding point about you can't play just zone 100% or man 100%.
Right.
They had some zone concepts in last year's defense.
Right.
But Mike's assertion that that's the way the league is going, that the league is going to more of zone coverage, is that accurate?
I don't think so.
I mean, you find a lot of different ways to skin the cat, as they say.
you
know,
definitely.
There are. And
you find a lot of ways to skin the cat. But at the end of the day, if you ever talk to a scout or a GM, when they're talking about corners, they need guys that can cover.
Yeah.
Can you cover? Because we can't just sit you out in a zone all the time. Because teams, the offensive coordinators, the quarterbacks, the receivers are too good. They know how to pick that apart. So you have to be able to switch it up. And so we need you to be able to cover. This league is not just going to zone principles.
A couple of people tweeted in on our question about who's the key man in the Buffalo Bills defensive backfield. Andrew Buchek, Darby for sure, looking to bounce back from last year and to be a leader the secondary will need with the help of Hyde. I guess, you know, I've heard this for months now. I guess I'm maybe one of the last ones on the bandwagon that says Ronald Darby, you know, spit up on himself last year. I don't think he did. He didn't have the year he had in his rookie year. Mm-hmm. I think there was overall confusion and dysfunction in the Buffalo defense last year. But I don't think Ronald Darby, you know, fell off the table last year, Donald. Tell me, I think you even feel a little bit more than I do. I know he needs to play better. I get that. But I don't think he was embarrassed last year, was he, on a regular basis?
I think he had a tough season last year.
Really?
Yeah, and it's really because of the season he had his rookie year. And then for him to take a step back in last year's season, it was like, man, like, what is this that we're seeing out of Ronald Darby? Because in his first year, he showed signs of being like, you know, this dude is good. Mm-hmm. This dude can make plays. And last year, he just didn't do it, you know. And it wasn't like teams – and he's going to be the number one corner, right? So when you're the number one corner on a team, the quarterback is supposed to look out there and say, oh, man, like, I don't know if I want
to
throw.
Last year, was he supposed to be here?
No, not last year.
Right.
But this year, right? So last year, he just wasn't – when the quarterbacks looked out at him last year, they weren't afraid to throw it his way. Up top, underneath, whatever they wanted to do, they could do that.
You know, strikes me they weren't afraid to throw it Gilmore's way either.
They weren't. But at least Gilmore came on in the second half of the season more than Darby did, you know.
Gilmore, I think, is a better player. Gilmore has better skills than Ronald Darby.
Yeah.
He should play better than Ronald Darby.
Yeah, but see, now Ronald Darby's stepping in the place of Gilmore to be the number one guy.
Maybe Tre'Davious will be the number one guy.
That's a lot to ask of a rookie corner.
But look, maybe Tre'Davious has more classic corner skills than Ronald Darby.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, we don't know. We haven't seen Tre'Davious, you know, when the bullets are flying yet. But I have a feeling I'm pretty sure he's a great athlete. He looks the part, and I wouldn't be, you know, maybe by the end of the year, maybe a year from now, we sit here and say Tre'Davious is the number one corner.
By the end of
that
year.
That would not surprise me at all.
I would think in the beginning of the season, we're going to look to Ronald Darby to be the number one corner. And when they go into man, to cover other teams' number one receivers. I don't know if they'll follow. I would think so. Man, it's tough to put a rookie DB because the rules here in the NFL are so different than the rules in college. At least Ronald Darby's played in his league, you know.
Yeah. It's not tough if you believe in the guy, which I'm pretty sure they have a pretty good – this group that drafted Tre'Davious White, I'm sure have a pretty good feeling about Tre'Davious White. And if you are willing to accept the stumbles that White or any rookie corner will have, I think you got to be a little bit willing
to
say –
be willing to.
There are going to be moments where we're like, man, he's a rookie and he looked like a rookie.
Yeah.
But I think with his skill set – look, if we're mid-season even, let's revisit this. I'm going to make a mental note in October. I'll ask you then, who's the Bills' number one corner?
All right.
Because I have a feeling it might be Tre'Davious White.
He has the skill set.
Yeah.
It's going to take him some weeks of, like, real live game action for us to really
– Right.
You know, he's looked good in practice without the pads and everything. We have to see once we get into camp, preseason games. But then once we get into regular season games, then we can really get an evaluation because he's gonna play in zone. He's going to be lined up in man. And we're talking about in the first – you know, a few weeks of the season, he's going to face some good receivers.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to, I mean, especially you talk about game two with Carolina and Kelvin Benjamin. You know, he's going to face him. I think you have Denver somewhere in there. First couple of weeks. I mean, he's going to face some guys, and we'll get an accurate evaluation of Tre'Davious.
Yeah, I have a feeling it's going to work out well for him. And that's a hunch because we haven't seen a whole lot of him. I think it's going to work out well for him. Let's hear from you. Who's the key man in the Buffalo Bills defensive backfield? The phone line's open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. That's our Twitter poll. And as we check that out, it's a pretty close race, really. And I have a feeling it might be because there's a lot with all the turnover in the Buffalo defensive backfield. There's a lot of scrutiny on that group. A lot of people wondering who's lining up where and how it's going to play out. 9 days until the first camp practice, the camp countdown question, who's the key man in the Bills' defensive backfield? And right now, with just getting started, about 1,000 votes in, 37% say Micah Hyde, 32% say Ronald Darby, 27% say Tre'Davious White, 4% say somebody else. Let us know what you think. Give us a call at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550.
I would say week 8, ask me that question after the Raiders game. Because we're talking about Panthers, Broncos, Falcons, Bengals, Buccaneers, Raiders, all teams with great receivers. Like, both receivers are great on all of those teams. So, you know, we'll get an accurate evaluation of Tre'Davious at that point.
So you're talking about the stretch. Well, you don't worry about the Jets. You're not concerned with that.
Yeah,
Packers,
I'm talking about
Panthers, Broncos, Falcons, Bengals,
Buccaneers,
Bucks,
Raiders.
Okay. We'll have a pretty good feeling.
You know, you get to really see what he has. And Ronald Darby as well.
Yeah, all of them,
right?
Yeah. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The key person in the Buffalo Bills secondary, who do you think it is? That's the topic we get ourselves started with today. A couple of more tweets on this. Andrew Buchek says, Gilmore was in the league longer than Darby. Of course he looks better. Give him more time in coaching and we will see. Sure. I think I don't think Darby has maxed out his potential at all yet. I guess my point is I don't think he fell off the table last year. I don't think
he fell off the table. I think we do want to see a bounce back season from last year, though. We do want to see that.
Yeah, like to see him play better. Darby.
Yeah. We need that.
Yeah. And there's a lot of unknowns in the Buffalo secondary.
I mean, there's definitely a lot of unknowns. I mean, who's going to be the nickel? You know, I mean, there's Kevon is there. You have Leonard Johnson, who – we talked about at the end of the spring being the guy who was probably in that spot for the nickel right now. I would think that Kevon has something to say about that once we get to camp.
Nickel.
You know?
So, yeah.
Or the nickel, at least.
Yeah, I think nickel is Kevon or Leonard Johnson.
Or Leonard Johnson, yeah.
And I'd put my money on Kevon because I think Kevon's a good young player who's – I think he's got, obviously, prototypical size.
Yeah.
And I think he's a good athlete. I think Kevon Seymour is more athleticism than you might expect from a guy that size.
I would think so. You know, so I'm hoping that Kevon does take over that spot. I think he showed a lot of promise last year. You know, so who knows? Maybe he could. We all know in this league, quarterbacks like to throw to those slot receivers. So whoever's playing the nickel is important.
Yeah, it's like a starter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's the key man? Who do you identify as the key man? Is it, in fact, Kevon Seymour who – could wind up on the outside as a corner. I'd look for more on the inside, however. Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Couple of tweets. Joshua Schwerin tweets in, Hyde is going to be the quarterback of the backfield. That'll be huge after seeing how the back end fell apart when Williams went down last season. And Chad Umbarger says, I voted Hyde because he is flexible and a veteran who fills the mentality that McDermott wants to install. That, I think, might be the best argument. He can play. Micah Hyde can play. But the argument that he would be the quarterback on the back end of the defense, that he is a player that they went out and paid, that sought after and paid, and that he seems to have the type of mentality, as Chad Umberger points out, that Sean McDermott wants to instill in this team, that goes, to me, a long way to making Micah Hyde the key man back there. But I'm open for suggestions of other guys.
I would think so. I mean, you know, and people sometimes want to say, well, the money doesn't matter. But, yeah, they did pay this guy. Like they want him to be the number one guy in the back end of this defense. Like the guy, the quarterback of the back end of the defense, the guy who will probably – he's going to be like that Swiss Army knife. They're going to ask him to do a lot of different things, you know, and so he is very important to this defense. And we'll get to see him once we get to training camp with the pads on and everything. But I do think that he and Jordan Poyer together, they look good in the spring.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they know each other. They've stated that they know each other from the past. I think that's going to go a long way. If those guys can be on the same page all the time, it helps Ronald Darby and a young Tre'Davious White.
You know who I can't wait to weigh in on this whole question of the Buffalo secondary? And I know he hasn't seen him yet because he hasn't been around in spring practice, but Kelso.
Oh, yeah.
Kelso watches secondary play like nobody else.
I know
else.
He does.
He's unbelievable.
You know, on Fridays during the season, yeah. when we go out there and we're watching the team practice, Kelso, he's like just looking at the DBs.
Yeah.
and coverage. Like, yeah.
And skills. He can look at players and say he can't, you know, his hips don't flip quick enough and all the intricate details. But
it's crazy.
He's going to be good, and especially when it comes to the question of, you know, man coverage skills versus zone concepts and who fits in where. And when Kelso goes to a couple of the training camp practices and gets a look at this group, kind of gets an overview of how the pieces fit together, he, I think, will be must listening for anybody concerned
about
it.
He comes up for training camp?
Yeah, he'll come up a couple times, sure. Yeah, as his racing schedule allows. We're talking about Mark Kelso, my broadcast partner on the play-by-play, who also is the general manager of a racing team, a NASCAR racing team. So he'll get up for camp, though, for sure.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, let's hear from you. What do you think about the Bills' defensive backfield, how it all fits together, who's the key man? We're taking a Twitter poll on that today. We're taking your phone calls on that, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550, or via Twitter. You can weigh in there. Also, we talk about the switchover of the Buffalo defense, the changeover for the entire roster from the Rex Ryan era to the Sean McDermott era. Richie Incognito had some thoughts about that and an appearance on the NFL Network last night. We'll hear those comments when we return. So come on back to the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
John Murphy, Donald Jones, starting our afternoon talking with you about the Bills secondary. You're welcome to join us. Phone lines open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550, or via Twitter. That's our Twitter poll. Who's the key man back there this year going into camp? 9 days away from the first training camp practice. What if I told you last January you would have a totally remade defensive backfield for the Bills? First, given what we knew about Aaron Williams at the time and what we saw from Corey Graham, what we knew about Stephon Gilmore approaching the chance at that point to be a free agent, I don't think any – don't let me speak for you. I don't think I would have been surprised if you would have told me there would be probably three new starters back there right this year from last year. Right?
I wouldn't have been surprised at all because going into it, we knew – that the Bills probably didn't want to entertain the ballpark where Stephon was going to get offered. I don't think anybody in the NFL thought the Bills are going to try to entertain what, Stephon Gilmore is going to want.
Based on where the market was?
Yeah.
And based on the way he played.
And based on the way he played, and then based on the money the Bills had to spend. It was like, I don't know if they want to get into that range with him, you know. So,
and it's important. I don't want to interrupt you, but it's important to think in those terms, especially people get so upset that Gilmore went to the Patriots. Well, really, who cares? I mean, if you don't want him, you know there's a chance to go to the Patriots or the Jets or the Dolphins or maybe who else, you know, the flavor of the month is. But you can't worry about that. Well, if we don't pony up the money, he might wind up with the Patriots. You can't operate
that's
like
the NFL.
That.
I mean, it is what it is. It's not like the Bills traded him to the Patriots. It just happened. You know, you knew that was Stephon, and then Aaron Williams, we knew he wasn't probably going to be back.
Right.
Corey was the guy that was in question if they were going to bring him back or not. This regime decided that they wanted to go
older.
Right. They wanted to go on a different route.
Safety was a projection for him from where his career began and where he had most of his success at corner and on special teams.
Right.
So
exactly.
We have 2 years in at safety.
Mm-hmm.
So
2 years in at safety. Yeah. You know, and when you have a defensive coach that comes in and you look at the secondary and how everybody played last year. This guy, the head coach and Sean McDermott, was a safety in his playing days, a defensive coordinator. Yeah, I wouldn't have been surprised at all. Like, I think he wants to just totally revamp this whole thing.
And the point is, I guess, and what got me thinking about this is that you could have predicted there was going to be major upheaval in the Buffalo secondary this year. But here we are, 9 days until the first training camp practice, and it kind of hits you in the face. Look at this, all new guys. Who's the key guy? Who's the leader back there? That's our Twitter poll. That's what we're discussing on the telephone. You can chime in on Twitter at John Murphy Show, as a couple of have already. John Dubek says, Tre'Davious White is the key guy. He says, I believe Tre'Davious White is the key man replacing Gilmore. Big shoes to fill. Bob the Builder tweets in, good question. Anyone could be the most important, but I'll say that it's key to have Darby make a comeback. Needs to reestablish himself. So, yeah, people are kind of all over the place on this, you know. Got to be Michael Harbour, got to be Darby, stepping in weekly against some of the best athletes in the world. If he finishes average, I'll consider it a win. Scheme should help. But I think you can go in a lot of different directions, which is why I think this makes for a good Twitter poll and a good way to start our discussion of the Bills as they count down to camp. The upheaval in the defensive backfield, which way do you think it'll go, and who do you think would be the key guy? Our Twitter poll right now with 1,200 votes in, 36% say Micah Hyde is the key guy in the Buffalo defensive backfield, but not far behind, Ronald Darby at 32%, Tre'Davious White at 28%, and other 4%. Are people overlooking the contributions? I mean, it's 28%. But are people overlooking the contributions that Tre'Davious White has to offer for this defense, Donald? Based on, look, he had a great college resume, a legit first rounder. I mean, he belonged in the first round, even later on in the first round where he was eventually selected. But you and I have had the opportunity to watch him work in the spring workout so far.
Yeah.
And that's why I say I don't know if everyone else, if the fans can appreciate yet how good this guy has looked. Maybe how much confidence they've already invested in Tre'Davious White, even after just OTAs and minicamp. I think this coaching staff, from what I can tell, feels really good about what they've seen from Tre'Davious White so far.
I think they feel really good about what they've seen from him so far, but this is a veteran coaching staff. You know, the head coach is a rookie head coach, but hey, this is a veteran coaching staff, and they understand how good guys look in spring and then how things can fall off once you get to training camp and into the season, you know, and so – Tre'Davious did have a very good spring. He picked a couple of balls off. He was always in the right spot, says the right things, does everything, it seems, the right way. But we still have to see once the pads go on. We still have to see once he gets into game action and stuff like that, you know. So I think everybody really is just on wait-and-see mode right now. You know, we all want to wait and see how this guy looks once we get into training camp and once we get into preseason games and then regular season games. We want to see him go against other receivers that he hasn't seen every day because – you know, there's other receivers do different things.
Right.
They work their bodies a little bit differently, and we want to see if he can adjust, make adjustments to different things during the course of a game and all of that stuff. So I think everybody's just on wait-and-see mode, probably even the coaching staff.
Okay, thanks for slowing me down a little bit. No, seriously, it's important because, look, I'm not putting Tre'Davious White in the Pro Bowl. I'm not
he's good. You
know, building his bust in Canton, Ohio yet. But I do think he's been impressive, and it is only spring workouts. You're right about that. It is spring workouts, OTAs, mini camps. But he's been good.
For a rookie guy drafted in the first round, he's been, to this point, what you expect to see out of a rookie first rounder. I don't care if he was top 10 or later in the first round. You get drafted in the first round for a reason, you know, and I think he's looked every bit of what we expect out of him to this point.
All right, let us know what you think. Who's the key man in the Buffalo defensive backfield? Maybe it is Tre'Davious White. Maybe it's Micah Hyde. Maybe it's Jordan Poyer. Nobody's come up with that name yet. Maybe it's Ronald Darby. Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. All of this discussion, part of our camp countdown, 9 days from the first practice at Bills training camp, and all of it really precipitated by the changeover in the defensive backfield. Sport Guy tweets in, every defensive back should look great in practice. They're not exactly covering high-end wide receivers. Preseason will be a better indicator. Do you agree with that, Donald? Should every defensive back look great in practice?
That's like saying everybody should look great in practice.
Right.
I mean, I don't
agree
with that.
Is it a slam at the Bills receiving core?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that means.
I've seen defensive backs look terrible in practice.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
Everybody has their day, you know. Tre'Davious is going to have his days. Look, so once again, he's going to have days where, you know, he's not going to have a good day. You know, they're going to get the best of him. They might score two bombs over his head or something like that in camp. How does he bounce back? I mean, everybody has their bad days in practice.
Maybe he's saying because he doesn't like the Bills receiving corps, but I don't necessarily agree that every defensive back should look good in practice. Big changeover in the secondary, big changeover overall, and the change from – head coach Rex Ryan to head coach Sean McDermott, was a topic that Richie Incognito got into last night. I caught a couple of minutes of it. Richie Incognito, actually, when I was watching, he was talking about Ezekiel Elliott. Did you see him last night?
I didn't see him.
He was on NFL All Access on the NFL Network. He had some pointed comments about Ezekiel Elliott. He talked about how the Cowboys internally, the leadership in the locker room, has to, grab Ezekiel Elliott and say, hey, come on, don't screw this up. Mm-hmm. But Richie also talked about the Bills, and we want to play a couple of those sound bites. Richie Incognito, who makes no bones about it, he liked Rex Ryan, liked playing for Rex Ryan, and Incognito had some really interesting thoughts on Rex Ryan's tenure here in Buffalo. Here's Richie Incognito on the NFL Network last night.
Yeah, you know, the culture change was needed. I love Rex. I love what he brought to the team. But I don't think our locker room was ready for it. I don't think we had a veteran enough group to be able to adapt to Rex's system and to be able to make that work. So now we have a young and hungry team. And with Coach McDermott coming in and being detail-oriented and holding guys accountable, hopefully that helps us take the next step.
Richie Incognito on NFL Network last night. Those of you watching on the video side on MSG, here's how you can tell that Richie's being honest. He was talking to Willie McGinnis. They had their sport coats off. They were in shirt sleeves, which means isn't that the code?
Yeah.
Were they
like,
standing
let's get
on
down
one of those
business. Let's fake talk.
Football fields and how about that pregame segment? Or NFL Network does it a lot when former players
they come on and they have
get on the little mini football field and
right.
running around and showing you things.
Try to break things down for you. Yeah, so he took his coat off.
Which means he's telling the truth.
Let's talk about
Richie did a good job, and he had important things to say, but the most important thing, the first words out of Richie's mouth last night, the culture change was needed. I don't think anybody would disagree with that based on Rex's two-year tenure, and, the Bills had some good moments in those 2 years and didn't win enough, certainly, but there was more than that, not winning enough. It was a culture change and maybe a more focused disciplined approach. I'm not talking about coaches yelling at players when I say discipline. I'm talking about discipline, attention to detail.
Yeah, that's what
that's what I think was missing, and that's what I believe Richie was referring
to. It's definitely attention to detail and discipline. Coach McDermott is not a guy, and fans will get to see him out at camp. He's not a guy who yells at practice like that.
I'm trying to think. There was one incident in the mandatory mini camp.
He did go off once.
He did. But over the last, the practices we saw over the last several months, that was the only time I saw him yell
right.
publicly in practice. What does he do in the meeting room? Who knows?
Who knows, right? But when you get to practice, he's not a guy who's out there yelling. He's a guy who's energetic. He's around at all of the different position groups, and he puts, he gets his input in there, at least. He's talking to guys, but he's not a guy who's out there yelling. But when you talk to everybody about him, his attention to detail is crazy, Mm-hmm. So, look, if I say I want you to take three steps on this, I want you to take three steps on this, and that's what it's about. When you talk about a culture change, if I say the route is at 5 yards, don't run it at four, don't run it at six. Pay attention to detail, because that extra yard or that yard that you didn't take to get to 5 yards is all the difference in the world. And I think that's the discipline. And when we talk about a culture change, that's the discipline and attention to detail that we're talking about.
Richie Incognito on the NFL Network, their all-access, total-access show, I think it is, right? NFL
Total Access. Yeah, total-access. Yep.
And he had more to say about Sean McDermott and talked about the difference between Rex Ryan the last 2 years and Sean McDermott coming in this year.
The biggest difference with Coach McDermott is he brings energy. He brings passion. And he's really stressing, the football team loving one another. Mm-hmm. He's really big onto, guys getting to know each other, building that winning culture. And, he's very passionate. He's a former wrestler. He brings a lot of good things to the table. And I'm most excited about, the winning culture that we're forming. And he's doing a bunch of cool activities, like having guys get up and speak in front of the team and talk about why football is important to them. And I'm learning more about my teammates that I've played with the last two seasons in a couple weeks in Buffalo than I've known for the last 2 years.
Richie Incognito on the culture change that Sean McDermott is trying to effect here at One Bills Drive. Important. Quite frankly, the last couple of coaches here tried to do the same thing in different ways. Richie is signed on board and likes what he's seen from Sean McDermott. And I do think there's something to be said. Look, the biggest way to change culture is to win. That would change the culture here.
Right.
But there's something to be said for getting to know your teammates, right?
Mm-hmm.
And getting to know who you're working with, who you're playing with. Getting to know people around the building. We've seen it a little
that's,
bit.
Sean
McDermott is
he wants guys to get to know everybody around the building, not just the teammates. Like you walk past one of the people that work in the cafeteria or the mailroom or whatever it is, get to know everybody in the building along with your teammates, along with your coaches, So that's good for this team. And you talk about a culture change. I think ultimately it always is going to come down to just that attention to detail and that discipline. And once you have both of those things, then you can start to win. And that's what really – I mean, you'll have a culture of winning once you win.
Win. you'll have a good culture once you win.
Right, once you win, you know. So, you know, it really starts all the way from the top down. The Pegulas, once they hire Coach McDermott and Brandon Bean, I think they feel like they found their guy that's going to be here for some years, you know. And mm-hmm. so as long as they feel that way and Coach McDermott –
chance to do it.
That's what I was about to say. As long as he gets that chance to be here – he'll be able to implement his system, his players, and you'll start to see this team win, and the whole culture will be different.
What was the culture? You played under Chan Gailey. He was your head coach when mm-hmm. your tenure here. What was the culture like under Chan? Was it lackadaisical? Was it non-serious? I mean, from the outside looking in, I thought, well, this is a pretty good group of guys. We got some good guys on this team. They seem to get along, seem to work hard. But from the inside, what was that culture like? And I won't ask you to compare it to what Sean's doing here because, you know, we're not on the inside to watch Sean do this. But how would you describe the culture under Chan Gailey?
I mean, we had a group of good guys. We had some talent on the team as well. He paid attention to detail. He wanted all of us to pay attention to detail. He would go off on people if you did things the wrong way. But overall, he was a family guy, just like Coach McDermott. He was, I don't want to say a player's coach, but he kind of had the same mentality as Coach McDermott. You know, your family is everything to you, paying attention to detail, discipline, all of that stuff. I think, like you said, we're not on the inside, so I don't know exactly how Coach McDermott is doing things. But Chan Gailey did, you know, he did have a nice system going. It's hard when you turn over coaches. You know, that's just what it is. When you turn over coaches, it's hard to win. That's just what it is. And ultimately, having a team full of good guys is one thing, but you got to have talent on the team. You know, you have to have players that fit into your system, but players that can make plays on the field. And if you don't have those players that can make plays on the field, then you're not going to win.
And it strikes me, too, and you may agree with this or not, Donald, I don't think you can change culture in a year or 2 years.
It takes time.
And a commitment to the culture you're trying to get to from the entire organization.
The crazy thing is, if this team was to end up in the playoffs this year, right, then everybody on the outside would say, oh, man, he's changed the culture.
Right.
And that's totally false. He hasn't changed the culture in 1 year. Like, a culture is, for me, when you have a team that's in the playoffs or around the playoffs every year, and your mindset is, we know we're going to be in the playoffs, or we know we're going to be around, that's changing the culture. Making the playoffs for 1 year, it ends your drought, but it doesn't change the culture around this building and really, you know, for your players, everybody around the building, and in this whole city. It won't change the culture until you win and you're consistently in the playoffs, you know, where everybody's coming to the games. Like, you remember, I think it was Steve. It was one of the guys, Thurm maybe. They talked about, you know, they knew they were going to win games.
Yeah.
and that's their culture. Their culture was, look, we know we're going to win games. We work hard. We know we have talent. We're going to win games. That's the culture that the Patriots have. We know we're going to win games. We know we're going to win 11, 12 games every year. That's where the Bills have to get to. But yeah. Ultimately, you got to. You can't do it in a year.
You can't do it just by making the playoffs.
No, you can't. It has to be every year, you know. And you get a couple of years where it's like, oh man, like they changed the culture down in Carolina, I believe. You know, where they won the division 1 year, and then the next year was like, oh man. Or I remember talking to these guys, and they said they had a year where they had a good year, and they started to feel like, I think we have something going here.
Right.
And then the next year they win a division, and then the next year they win it again, and it's like, oh yeah, like we're in the right direction now, you know, and it takes some years to really change a culture of a team.
Takes players, too. Quarterback.
That, too.
Cam Newton. Luke Kuechly on defense. Right.
Right.
It takes players.
It takes players.
All right, we're going to talk about the big changes in the Buffalo secondary, and you're welcome to join us as well with the phone lines open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Who's the key man back there in the back end of the Buffalo defense this year as we are 9 days away from training camp? Give us a call. Let us know what you think or weigh in on Twitter. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones. We are coming to you live from One Bills Drive on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon, 9 days away from the start of training camp.
Now, I was just talking to the philosopher that is Andrew Peters out in, yes, in the other room, and he talked about changing the culture, and because the Sabres are in the, really in the same position, right?
Yes.
And he talked about when you win, that doesn't change the culture. But my thing is, when you win, it definitely doesn't change. Like, if they made the playoffs this year, it doesn't change it. But like he was saying, it does get guys – you start to feel it like, man, we made it to the playoffs.
Right.
We know what we did to make it to the playoffs.
Right.
And so we need to do this again next year.
Right.
And so you start to get that buy-in from everybody, or guys are getting it, you know, and guys do focus in a lot, you know. We made the playoffs this way. We weren't going out and all of this stuff. And that's what starts to get it going in the right, yeah, direction. But it still does take years to do.
Yeah, I would think so. We're talking about defensive backs and the changes in the Buffalo secondary and what you think the key guy is back there. Kerry in Buffalo has a thought on that. Kerry, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, I just got to say, you know, everybody thinks Stephon Gilmore is the man, and he was. But, you know, he'll be great in New England, and we all know that. But I'm telling you, John, I know you remember when Mario Clark, Charles Rohmes, Tony Green, those kind of guys – those are players. And this guy here, man, it's all about the money now, and that's cool. But, you know, and Donald's probably going to disagree with me. But I'm telling you, man, they're going to be great on New England, same as Mike Gillisley.
Yeah, I don't know if he is. Stephon Gilmore made it to – you're probably going to disagree with him. But I disagree with you, too. Gilmore made it to one Pro Bowl. Last year, I don't know if he deserved to be at the Pro Bowl last year. He'll be fine in New England. He'll be what he is. We saw him here 4 years. We know who Gilmore is, Stephon Gilmore. We saw who he is. I don't think he'll be much different. Just as, you know, Chris Hogan was pretty much the same player last year as he was with the Buffalo Bills. Would he catch two more passes with the Patriots playing with Tom Brady? Just as Gillisley is, I think, pretty much going to be the same player he was here. Will they win more? Yeah, because they have a great quarterback and a great coach.
In a different culture,
right?
Like those guys, you go there, and I'm telling you, when you walk in, when I went there, they picked me up, and the guy said to me when he picked me up from the airport on the way to the stadium, he said to me, "We know we're going to win." And when you have everybody saying things like that, and you walk in that building, it's like you can just feel it. You can sense it, the way everybody walks and talks. There's not that much joking and laughter and stuff. It's all business, you know, and you know the deal. You're coming in here to win. And when you know that, you're going to go in there and you're going to focus and do your job, you know. And so Stephon is going to go in there. I don't know if you're going to see the same amount of missed tackles as you might have seen, because he knows this missed tackle, like everybody else is doing their job on that team, and I'm the one that missed the tackle, it's gonna stand out. He tweeted out yesterday that he's going to be playing on TV a lot more and all that stuff. Yeah,
yes.
And a lot more people will see if you miss tackles and stuff like that, you know. So he doesn't want his family and the national, this whole nation to see that stuff, so he's going to focus in. It's just they're in a different culture. They're in a place where they have the quarterback and the coach, and so, yeah, they play differently, but it's really just their focus. Yeah. A lot more, because he knows.
Secondary for the Bills, 9 days away till training camp. Who's the key man going into training camp 9 days away? Give us a call in the next hour on that, 803-0550, and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We'll get Steve Tasker to weigh in on this. The Bills special teamer, the Wall of Famer, is standing by to join us in studio when we return. And you're welcome to join us as well on the telephone line. We'll talk with Steve about culture change, about defensive backfield, about training camp in general. All of that coming up next. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We shot 100. We played Saturday, Friday last week, and then we played Monday and yesterday. And Jay, my levels are incredibly high. Take it way down. No, it's the same. You got to turn the knob before it. No, it's the same. The same. Woo. You got to turn the knob, dude. It's
what do we do with the rest of this commercial? Repeat the deal, I guess.
Yeah, I can't
Napa
even.
Full synthetic I'm motor serious. Oil for just $4.29 a quart. That's Napa know-how. Napa
know-how. It's fine, my
General States pricing. Sales prices
I mean,
do not include
loud.
Applicable state local taxes
loud.
Or recycling fees.
Offer can you just turn his down, Jay?
Oh, come on. You can't do that.
That's not a thing.
No, that turn it, all right, turn it off. See if you can turn it off.
No, it's not true.
No, it's still on.
It's true.
It's not moving. I'm in number two, you goober.
That's right.
All right.
Go to three. Go to three.
You're probably way down.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Update from One Bills Drive. 9 days away from the start of the first training camp practice. We'll be there live with the John Murphy Show starting a week from Wednesday, a week from tomorrow. Around the NFL, yesterday was the deadline for teams to reach long-term deals with players they had tagged for franchise tags, and Washington failed to sign Kirk Cousins to a long-term deal, setting the stage for his possible departure next season. Because they could not come to an agreement by 4 p.m. yesterday, they cannot negotiate a long-term deal until after the season ends. That means Cousins will become the first NFL quarterback to play under the franchise tag for a second consecutive season. He will earn $23.9 million. The Carolina Panthers fired their general manager, Dave Gettleman, yesterday, which was surprising, the timing a little bit odd. And the some former Carolina Panthers weighed in on the Gettleman dismissal. On Twitter, Josh Norman, the star cornerback, who was less than thrilled when the Panthers pulled his franchise tag designation last year, just tweeted out a couple of eyeballs. And then Steve Smith, who never got over the Panthers' decision to cut him loose before the 2014 season, said, "Put your goggles on because there's going to be blood and guts everywhere." Carolina Panthers veterans not happy with Dave Gettleman, some of them happy to see him go as general manager there. Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott's appeal of a misdemeanor conviction for speeding was moved to a different court as he contends a citation from April. State trooper estimated back in April that Ezekiel Elliott was driving his Dodge Charger at 100 miles per hour in a 70 mile per hour zone on a tollway in Frisco, Texas. The news comes in the wake of what a police source said was Elliott's involvement in an incident in a Dallas bar on Sunday. And the Bisons got back in the win column last night, beat the Columbus Clippers in Columbus 7-5. Buffalo starter Chris Rowley threw six innings, allowed just four base hits and a walk. The Herd trying to stay in the win column with the second game of their series in Columbus tonight. First pitch scheduled for 6:05. That's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Donald Jones and Steve Tasker. Donald, how about players going 90, 100 miles an hour in a inside joke, Steve, man. I'm sorry.
75 miles an hour. So he's only going 25 miles over the limit, right?
How about that?
It's only 25.
Listen, if you're going triple digits, you're in trouble. Yeah.
Let that be a lesson. I couldn't resist. I know you like the speeding.
When you said it in the update, you looked at me.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm like, he's about to go here with it.
I went there.
I did want to pose a question to you guys. What do you guys think about Le'Veon Bell turning down that deal that they gave him?
Yeah. Le'Veon Bell was like another franchise tag guy. Pretty good deal.
The deal was like a 3-year deal with 32, I think, over the 30 over the first two seasons. Turned it down and decided to play.
Yeah.
On it. I mean, what does he think he's going to get as a running back?
I don't know. Especially with 3 years. Especially
right.
Given his history. Steve Tasker is in studio with us, by the way. And Steve, we talked a lot yesterday about franchise tags. More and more, Cousins, you see it. Le'Veon Bell, you see mm-hmm. it. Players are kind of betting on themselves, taking the cash under the tag, the 1-year deal. You know, Cousins going to take the $24 million this year.
It's always a good idea for the quarterback. It's always a good idea by the quarterback.
Because the money is.
Because the money's there. Yeah. Running backs, not so much. I think Le'Veon made a mistake. You take that deal. You know you're going to get the first 2 years. That's $32 million guaranteed. And, you know, what's he going to do if he – you know, they take such a pounding.
Yeah.
And, you know, what are you going to – there's just no recourse. If you get injured, you will never see anything near that. If it doesn't matter if you break your big toe, mm-hmm. if you're out for a month, if you're not able to play, or if it happens, or if you get turf toe, and then you get a pulled hamstring,
right.
or then you get a bruised shoulder, and you're out for half a year, or what happens if it's a catastrophic injury where it's just a huge risk. It's such a physical game, and that's why it's always been. The NFL, that has been the professional sports league, if you sign the contract, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get the money because mm-hmm. of that physical nature of the game. And it's – while I get it for a quarterback because they're protected and it's not as physically pounding as it is for other players, and there's so much off the field that you got to mm-hmm. do. And every other – now, you can say it for a receiver. I could see that maybe. But not running back? Yeah. That's like – yeah, man.
And running
that's
backs are not
crazy.
Getting paid like that.
They're devalued. The position's devalued because you're getting – you got a kid that's never played in the pros coming in last year in Ezekiel, and he's in the conversation for MVP. Mm-hmm. But Thurman's listening to this. It ain't that tough. You got to be tough.
Yeah.
It's simple. But it ain't. It's hard. But it's difficult. I mean, it's not easy. So you got to be that guy. But man, oh man, that betting on yourself as a running back, I get it. But dude, that ain't smart.
Steve Tasker's in studio with us. We got a lot of things to talk about, including our topic of the day. We'll get to that in a moment about the Bills' defensive backfield. But Steve, I know you were out of town last night, so you may not have seen this, but our great group over in Bills Broadcasting finished up their series of Bills Top 10 last night with the top 10 individual performances in franchise history, offense and defense. The show aired at 9 o'clock last night on MSG. It will re-air again, and very soon you'll be able to see all of these series on BuffaloBills.com. But the number one performance in Bills history, I'm assuming you're in this game, Jim Kelly against the Steelers, September 8th, 1991, 6 touchdown passes in the game. You recall that game?
I remember. Yeah. I think 4 of them were to Don.
Yeah.
And Andre had one. James had one. Or was it Thurman or something?
Yeah, 6 touchdown passes. I mean, Kelly was great. Almost right out of the box, he was great on
and
this franchise.
You know, I'll tell you, let's face it, too, when you do it against a franchise like the Steelers or, you know, like a Cowboys or a Giants team, and one of the old franchises like that, it means more. Yeah. Or the Raiders, like the 51-3 game we had against the Raiders, that meant a little more because it was against an iconic franchise. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but – yeah, that 91, right in that stretch, that was the, you know, Jim was at his zenith as a player.
Yeah, that's what the offense was.
And he had the guys around him. They were. And plus, early in the season when they were like teams that hadn't really, we were still making our first lap in that no huddle. Some of these teams still hadn't seen it firsthand. Yeah, that's a great call. That's a good one. Yeah,
that was the number one. Donald asked me yesterday, you know, we're looking at the list of 10 that wound up as the top 10.
By the way, who was the top 10 special teams?
Well, that's where I'm getting to. There was no special teams.
Yeah, I know, right?
None.
It's the story of my life, Murph.
Well, what, kickers, punters? I mean, Brian Mormon had some incredible games.
Yeah.
It'd be hard to say that was ranks alongside some of these others, right? But no special teams.
Well, that's the reason. I mean, that's the reason it gets overlooked because it just can't rank with a 6-touchdown performance from a quarterback.
What was the best special teams game that, A, you ever played, you think, or that you ever saw from somebody else? I mean, was there a return guy
I mean, there's a couple of guys that did that, certainly. I think one of the better games I had also happened to be a game in which I caught a touchdown, my first touchdown pass, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, it's kind of different. The Arizona Cardinal game here in 1990, first half of the season. That was probably as good a game as I ever had.
Was that Rich Camarillo's famous backward punt?
He had a couple of those, And I forced a fumble on him. I recovered a couple of fumbles. Had a couple of a couple of tackles, you know, that kind of stuff.
Again, he just misses it. Yeah, you know,
that kind of stuff.
I can't remember now. But yeah, dude, it's been a lifetime ago. I can't remember. I brought in like 6 pair of reading glasses today by mistake. That's
but
where
no,
I'm
there
at.
Are no special teams performances on this list.
I was joking, but
most of them are offense, a couple of defenses.
Yeah.
Thurman Thomas' performance in Super Bowl 25 in a losing cause when he caught
heroic.
15 or caught 5 passes and carried it 15 times. I mean,
was
he was the MVP of that game.
It was heroic, yeah. Yeah, he was the guy. And it's funny, too, because I think back now to the, you know, they had the 30 for 30 on for that team, and Thurman, you know, to this day regrets some of the things that happened in subsequent Super Bowls. You know, when he lost, you know, the helmet incident and then the fumble in the fourth. You know, he feels like he let the team down, but goodness gracious, in that first Super Bowl, you know, there's no question all of us let him down. He was heroic.
Steve Tasker joins us in studio, not just to talk about Buffalo history, but in his role with the NFL on CBS. He keeps a close eye on the Buffalo Bills. And let me take you to our topic of the day, Steve. We're only 9 days, by the way, just 9 days away from the first training camp practice.
I got to squeeze in some more rounds of golf.
Yeah.
Because it goes away. It goes away fast.
You better play some more 100 holes. Yeah,
that's the crusher, though. You know, we all do that. I mean, it's in our business. People out there, they can sit back and they can take as much training camp as they want. But, you know, we're locked in. I mean, we're – you know, nowadays, if it's a beautiful, especially early in the spring, if it's a beautiful day, you kind of get out and do stuff. Mm-hmm. But now it doesn't matter if it's nice out or not; you're booked.
You know what always gets me when people will say to me, I consider them good Bills fans, but they'll say, I don't really pay attention until the first game. I don't pay attention to training camp. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
That's where it's all going down. I mean, that's when, like, my interest is almost at its peak, just because you're getting ready for the season and you're watching all these battles, and I'm getting ready to do play-by-play, and who's this guy, who's that guy?
Yeah.
I would say this next month, or that starts next week, for those 4 weeks of training camp, that's probably when I'm busiest throughout the course of the year.
Yeah.
You know, it's for me, it's just because football is back.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's as simple as that for me. You've been waiting for 9 months, you know, and now football is back, and I love to see football. I love practice. Preseason games, but at least the practices I like to see.
Right. So you guys have been talking about the culture change stuff. I was listening.
Yeah. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. I mean,
okay. I got a lot to talk about. I was talking in a couple weeks.
I know you talked to, you know, Jason Peters out on the Peters out on the, and I was too. He and I were both talking. We could talk for hours about culture change and what it means, what it is, and it's just never ending, because that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's group dynamics. And, you know, you got these guys that, you know, you hear stuff coming out of locker rooms about, you know, I liked it with Rex and da-da-da-da-da, and, you know, all this and all that, you know, and an average fan will say, hey, listen, you're making money, go in there and work hard and do the thing. Well, the problem with that is, and I get it, and believe me, even the guys, you know, that aren't making that much money, you're making life-changing money for the for the rest of America. But the simple fact of the matter is this: you get in the NFL locker room, everybody's making the money, so it ceases to be a factor in how you interact with people.
Right.
If you're on an assembly line, everybody's kind of making the same thing. Well, that's what the NFL locker room is. The numbers are different, but the atmosphere and the reaction to each other's paycheck is the same. Mm-hmm. It don't matter. So it's all about group dynamics. Mm-hmm. The culture will only change when you have success with it. You can do whatever you want, but that's what the goal is. You strive for success, and when you start to achieve success, then the guys that are the main cause of that success, you know, the players, you got to have, especially on a football team, you know this, Don, you got to have others who support those great players, who embrace their roles as lesser stars or role players, embrace it and support those great players, knowing that you can depend on those guys. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that's where your group dynamics become. You know, the great players have to interact with the lessers and the others, like, you know, role players. And your team becomes about what it does great.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does, and the locker room becomes more together, more fun to be around because you're succeeding and guys have or know they're contributing. Whether it's big contribution or little contribution, it's all important.
Right.
And that's how your culture evolves. It evolves because of success. And then you start to formulate why you're successful, and that's what you focus on, and that becomes your culture. So without success, You're just trying to win.
It's good that you're saying this, though, because John and I go back and forth on this all the time when, you know, people talk about Coach McDermott is changing the culture and all of that stuff, and it's like, you got to win to change the culture, right? Like, does the culture change happen when
– Right now, yeah. Right
just
now, you're
by
just
– culture, or do you have to win to change
right that? Now, you're just changing how you're doing things. There ain't no culture yet. They haven't even – you know, that ain't a thing yet.
Yeah.
That isn't even a thing yet. You're changing the way you do things and starting the process by which you're going to win games. Once you win games, then you begin to find out who you are and how things are working and what it takes to be successful. And then you focus on those things, and all this other stuff slips away and gets, and you know, as it evolves. And I know Sean McDermott, in, you know, in February when a group of us got together for dinner with him, it's about sustaining it.
Right.
And when you have great players, you know, you support the great players with the rest of the roster, and those guys know that. You know, the lesser guys, the others like me, you know, you support the great players. Well, then those guys kind of start to peak out, and then through the others, you have guys emerge and say, wow, we draft this guy now. He's really a great player. Listen, and then he gets a voice, and then here, forget about playing. Then he gets a voice in the locker room.
Yeah.
He has a presence that he's being supported by others. Mm-hmm. And he becomes, and he's got to be the right kind of guy because he learned from the former great players who have peaked out.
Right.
You know, so that's how it becomes sustainable. And it sounds very convoluted and complicated, and it is. It's all about relationships, personalities, success, and being able to humble yourself and learn about how these guys did it, but, you know, why we're successful and being willing to buy into that. And that's how a culture evolves. But it starts with success to me.
But we were saying, and Don and I were saying in the last hour, Steve, and you may not agree with this, say the Bills make the playoffs this year, that doesn't necessarily mean the culture has changed yet, right? It's 1 year of success.
Right.
I guess I would state that you need to do it for several years over the course of time to say, now we have a winning culture. It's one thing to make the playoffs, win 9-10 games, squeeze yourself into the playoffs, and that's great. Right. We'll take it. We'll all take
right.
that.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, right.
But you haven't really changed the culture. You can't really change the culture in just one season, one year on the job.
Right. Yeah, because your players have to – it could be, you know, you catch lightning in a bottle, no question yeah. about it, and then Dolphins. It goes away. And it goes away. When it becomes a culture is when the team wins and then they are committed to the things other you – know, they're committed to each other and the team – to continue it, mm-hmm. and guys have to be humble enough to accept their role in that success, and not, you know, be disgruntled. Yeah, you're right. Just going to the playoffs 1 year doesn't mean it, but it will give you an identity. You know, we won this year because of this, and there's some of these things where, you know, like well, let's say I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but look at the Atlanta Falcons last year. I mean, mm-hmm. they went to the Super Bowl and looked like they were going to run away with it. And you got to come back now and say, you know, here's what we did. And then you got to live with that success. You can't just like, all right, you know, this is what I did last year. I'm gonna, you know, I'm
I
good.
I mean, would anybody
you know?
Argue right. the Falcons have changed their culture yet, even with their
that's
success?
There you
I don't
go.
Know
that's
that
that's the great question. You gotta if when they continue to start doing that and they can sustain it, yeah, then it's a culture. But now, for now, it's just a little bit of success that they've had, and they've got to build upon.
With Steve Tasker, the Bills Wall of Famer, the NFL on CBS standout. Your experience here, Steve, in 1986, and you arrived here, what, the same week or week after Marv took over, right?
5-6 days after Marv got the job. I was the first new player.
Right. Yeah. Did you – I mean, you came to a team that was in a
two
little bit
14,
of a playoff
2-14, 1-8, yeah.
Right. So, yeah. Obviously, a team that was in desperate need of a culture change.
Mm-hmm.
You were parachuted in here in the middle of the season. Did you think to yourself, whoa, this is different culture than what I had in Houston? Or
yeah.
did that sort of develop?
It was. I mean, there's a lot of similarity. I mean, football team's a football team, no question about it. But this is a team that, you know, you walk in. Nobody knew then how good they were going to be, but Jim's already in the room. Bruce is already in the room, and Andre's in the room. And Marv's up at the head of the room, and Bill Polian's sitting in the back. I mean, there's 5 Hall of Famers nobody even knows yet.
Yeah.
So there were some players in there. But there's also there's a lot of things going on there because it was the 1980s, mid-80s. The league was different then. Mm-hmm. There was no free agency. And at that time in the NFL, if you played a long time, you were a leader by de facto. I mean, that was just the way it worked back then. And it didn't matter if you were a great player or that because all the money was kind of the same. And, you know, so it – the old players were the leaders. That has completely changed, and that's when it began to change, when they got Bruce and Jim and Andre, and then they drafted Thurman and traded for Cornelius Bennett. Now in the league, and rightfully so now, it's not about the longevity. It's about who's the best player.
So,
and that's who your leaders need to be.
When you win and then you start to get an identity and you start to change your culture – that ultimately can change an individual player's mindset, right? Like, so let's say a guy like a Marcell Dareus, who has been in some trouble in the past, partied, done different things, mm-hmm. been suspended. You start to win, it can change his whole mindset, where now he's focusing in like, man, we're winning, I get it, and this team needs me. And now you start to see him be the Marcell Dareus that we want him to be every year.
Right, there. Their role on the team stays the same, but they understand their importance. They understand how good it is when the whole team wins, how much better it is in the locker room. Mm-hmm. It's more fun to be at work. It's you know, all of that stuff. Yeah, absolutely. Everybody's mindset changes a little bit. And the question is, I mean, you look at the update you just had. Ezekiel Elliott had a little success last year.
Right.
He's wobbling a little bit right now.
Sure.
I mean, he's having trouble keeping it between the lines right now. And in a good team, you know, Michael back in the day with Dallas, Michael Irvin or Emmitt Smith or Troy Aikman, mm-hmm. somebody comes up and puts their arm around you and says, hey, bro, you need to straighten out a little mm-hmm. bit. You need to cut that out. And the guy says, you know what, you're right. What do I do? And they say, hey, don't do this, do this, do this, do this, do that. You know,
right.
And you got a guy that says, yeah, they mentor him a little bit. I don't know that Ezekiel has got that going on right now. So, you know, they lost Tony Romo, who might have been a nice stabilizing voice.
Right.
But you got another rookie who's just as young as Ezekiel is, who's the quarterback. So they got some leaders. Yeah, very young. And they don't have any
team.
Of those old guys that are saying, whoa, whoa, and at least don't have the voice to say, whoa, 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 bro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, take it back a notch. What are you doing? You know, you don't be doing that.
Right.
And guys have to be willing to listen. You know, that's why great teams become greater because those great players, as great as they are, they set their egos aside and say, okay, I'll do that for the team, for you guys, because they like each other. And they do that. So
talking with Steve Tasker about this issue of culture change, you said something a minute ago, Steve, and I wrote it down. You said culture change happens when a team becomes about what it does great. What does that mean? And how do you know when that happens? How do you identify this is who we are? Is it like a bolt out of the blue? Is it a light goes on?
Because you got great players, and they're going to be great every week. And those are the guys you center everything around. The game plan, the locker room, the voices – the others in the locker room, they become about supporting their role, and their role is great. I mean, because you got to take the pressure off those guys. You can't be just say like we're going to hand it off to Shady 35 times this game because nobody else. You got to embrace your role, knowing that the focal point is going to be the running game of this team, and whatever their defense. The coaches know, and then the players know too what their great players are. But you got to be okay with that. You can't be coming in and after meetings to your position coach say, hey. I got like two targets last week. That's horrible.
Coach, what's up, man?
What are you doing? And then you go back down the locker room and you say it to your guys in front of the other guys. I got two targets. You know what? We won by 20. Yeah. Shut up. Mm-hmm. you shut up. Yeah. You got to have guys that say, okay, I'm with that. I'm good. I want to do it. And then you maximize it. When you get your chances, you make them all. Mm-hmm. And then you get your share of reward in whatever reward you want, whether financial or media, print, or attention from the fans or the coaching staff or your teammates. You get the reward you get when you make the most of your opportunities. That's basically what I was saying with that.
Okay. I want to talk to Steve about a couple of other issues, including the Bills' secondary this coming year. We're going to talk – I want to talk to you about a couple other things I've written down. Steve Tasker in studio with us. We're back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones, and Steve Tasker takes a break from his golfing duties on this beautiful summer afternoon. Seriously, is this breaking your heart?
You guys are crushing me with all this golf stuff. I do play golf once in a while, but come on.
But today is like a prime day. You can still get out and get
I played golf. Yesterday, and then I got in late last night. I'm ready for a break. I got to mow my lawn today, actually.
Okay. When I was off, I played this will be nothing to you, but I played five times in 8 days. I was just sick of golf after
that's
that.
Big.
Yeah, it didn't get any better.
That's like the zenith of your golf, though, right?
of
that's
the summer,
right?
Exactly.
That's it. Yeah,
you're
on the downhill now, right?
Where are we? July. I'll probably play five more times the rest of the year. That'll be it for me.
Yeah, I get it.
After a while, it's golf, right? It's like, well, whatever. Yeah. I don't need to play today.
Now, I'll tell you what, though. That's one of the great. And we talk about this all the time. I want to get off the subject, but you go around the country and people, you tell me live in Buffalo and da da da. But you know what I love about Buffalo? Yeah. There's times, I don't want to play golf. I'm done with it. I got other stuff I got going on. We had four hard seasons in this region, and you can play golf through a solid two of them, summer and fall. Mm-hmm. But it's great doing other stuff when you're in Buffalo. You go downtown in the wintertime and skate at the Harbor Center. You go to go down south in the ski country. It's just great to live in this
Chamber
region.
Of Commerce.
It's awesome, man. Right? It is, right?
Do you play
it's
in
true.
The fall? Because, you travel a lot and work. Do you get to play in the fall?
Yeah, I can play like – early in the week, like on Tuesdays, if I get back in town, all right. And if it's nice, but then it starts to get crispy. I'll tell you what, there is no golf better than fall golf when the leaves are out. Hmm. Yeah, it's
beautiful.
Oh, man, it's a slice of heaven then.
Steve Tasker is in studio with us talking a lot about changing the culture. And I got a call that I think has something to say about that. Chuck calling from Clarence. Go ahead, Chuck. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, guys. Yeah, it's directed at Steve. It's a question I really wanted to ask for a long time. And I had a perception of what happened back then. I just don't know if it's correct or not. Maybe you can clear it up. And it was back probably just a year or two after you arrived, before the team was about to become a championship team. And you guys went through some kind of problem in the locker room, and they called it the Bickering Bills.
Yeah.
And everyone in the area got nervous about it. The newspapers and all the media were on top of it saying you were fighting again and you're going to be losers again. And I look at it now, looking back, I think you guys were almost like self-cleaning. You were raising the bar with each other and challenging each other. And you really were on the verge. And you almost had to go through this. And I think at the time, we had never been there before. We were all misinterpreting the thing. Like, you guys are just dysfunctional as a team. And I see it that you're on the verge now. But I just – wanted you to talk about it. And
that is an absolutely great point, because that's exactly what happened. We had a culture change going on from just what I had said earlier. It became the old guys who were trying to lead and do their best to lead the club, and they just weren't good enough to do it, good enough football players. And they weren't well-liked enough around the locker room for guys to really want to be led by them. They weren't well-liked. And, you know, in the wisdom of the Hall of Fame guys we had leading the organization in Marv Levy and Bill Polian, they picked the right guys to jettison, and it wasn't very many of them.
Mm-hmm.
But then they forced, not only forced, but they also promoted you guys like, well, Jim and Bruce and Thurman and Shane Conlon and Kent Hall, and, well, you know, the Buffalo fans know those names, and the rest of the names like Daryl Talley and stuff. They said, listen, guys, this we want this to be your team. Forget about who's old and who's young. You guys are the guys. And because of that, those guys were brought together as a, you know, as a group of leaders, and they kind of looked at each other in a different light, other than just, you know, Bruce and Jim and Thurman, and, you know, Thurman, he was big deal was man. He called Jim out when Jim was, you know, had that young.
Sure, well, I was going
to
say,
and the guys needed to learn too.
The
how
public
to do it.
Face of the Bickering Bills was that dispute between. Mm-hmm. Thurman and Jim, and it involved Howard Ballard and missing a block, and Jim took a shot. That was publicly what went on around.
Yeah, Jim was an idiot back then. He knew. He knows it now. I mean, he just said some stupid stuff because that was, you know, Jim just said whatever came in his head. You knew what he was feeling. He was so genuine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that when he was an idiot, he genuinely looked like an idiot. So, but, you know, the thing about Jim was he was also the first guy to go, you know what, you're right. I was wrong, man. And, you know, when a guy's good as Jim and a guy's good as Bruce, and when they go, you know what, that's my bad, guys, like, man.
You respect that.
You love that.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll play hard for those guys. And that's generally what happened. When Bruce and Jim and those guys were willing to, you know, not only say, hey, I was wrong, but also, you know, be made fun of and mm-hmm. joke in the locker room and, you know, be humbled by getting a joke played on them or, you know – you know, the guys, others, like we've been talking about on the team, man, they wanted to play for those guys. And then we got good really fast.
We're 9 days away from the Bills' first practice at training camp, Steve. And I want to kind of see what you think about training camp and how maybe that factors into to building team chemistry and changing the culture, as we talked about. Don and I were looking. There's only 11 teams now going off-site to training camp.
Right.
So for 21 other teams, it's showing up for work at the facility just like they do the rest of the year.
Yeah.
It's a trend, obviously, teams keeping their practices at their facility. What's to be gained by doing what the Bills do and 10 other teams by going off-site for training camp? What do you think?
Well, I don't know what's to be gained except that it's a better atmosphere than the one they have right here. But there's no question we're in the middle of an evolution of the NFL. It used to be everybody had to go away because they used to have an unlimited amount number of guys. You could bring in 150 guys to training camp.
Right.
And some teams did. And it changed just before I entered the league, where they dropped it down. You had to have 85 guys was the limit, or 90 guys, whatever it was back then. They had, the year before, the Oilers had 110 or 115 guys. They had guys with jersey numbers, 115. So I think training camp, and whether you have it here or whether you have it there, I think here's what happens. For me, a training camp should look like this. What does your team, what is your head coach and your team, what's the perfect environment for them to do everything you want to do at training camp? Pick your guys, evaluate your guys, have the facilities and the practice fields, the weight room, the meeting rooms, and the accommodations. Mm-hmm. Where are they going to sleep? Where are they going to eat? The perfect environment is one that promotes all of that in as small a space as possible, where they are and I think for me, and I'm just saying, maybe Sean McDermott and other coaches around the league don't agree with this, I think you need to have those guys together all the time.
Yeah.
Never changes. All those guys need to be together and need to see each other constantly, talk to each other constantly, and commiserate with how tough camp can be, or enjoy how good camp is or how good they're. So I think all those things need to be done in a confines of a place where the team becomes familiar with itself and the players become familiar and the coaches know their players better. And so if you can do that at your facility, and there are some facilities out there that are built with that in mind,
mm-hmm.
and then there are some like that go to colleges like St. Right. John Fisher that have right. that facility and that kind of atmosphere where guys are thrown into a small space where they meet, they practice, they eat, they sleep all together. Right there. And that's the mindset, I think, for training camp.
I think you look at the movie Remember the Titans when they went away. I mean, high schools are still doing that. You know, they go away to some remote place together, and they all stay together in the same dorms or whatever it is. They eat together. Everything that you do was together because you do have to bond as a team. You do have to come together. I think, like Steve is talking about, St. John's Fisher, when you look at it, the guys – You walk everywhere. You walk from the dorm down to the training room, out to the field, back to the cafeteria. You walk everywhere together. You'll see the whole group of the team, the whole team walking together to practice. You know, if you bring it back to a place like this, then what? The guys are either staying at a hotel or they're staying at home, where now you have to either bus the guys in or the guys are driving themselves, and it's just too much room for distraction when you have that stuff. You know, you guys can go home and see their families and, you know, we want people to be able to see their families, but at the end of the day, we need you here together doing everything together because in a second we'll be back to normal life once camp is over.
The Vikings announcing today that this is their last season at Mankato State up in Minnesota. They've been there since 1966. They're pulling things into their new complex coming up. But it also hits me that, you know, this Bills camp, which starts, you know, the first practice 9 days from today, only lasts 3 weeks. I would imagine you guys, I know you guys were at camp, what, 5 weeks sometimes, 6 weeks?
Early on, but as it evolved out of that over the course of my career, it got shorter and shorter, you know, where we'd come back and have the last week and a half of camp here.
Yeah.
And they'd go through the final evaluations back here. And, you know, and the guys who didn't have homes or whatever would, you know, they'd be put up at a hotel, local hotel. But, you know, you could do it here in the Bills facility, but you'd need – you know, be the best if you go across in one of the parking lots, put up a, you know, a 200-room hotel, and during the during training camp, have it closed down, use it for training camp, and then open it up for hotel use, obviously.
I'm pretty sure.
But that's what would happen, have to happen, because that's really the big sticking point for this facility is dormitories.
Right. And they feed people here. That's not an issue.
Oh, they got a great cafeteria. They got a big food service, you know, right here at the stadium, which, you know, wasn't the case when I started.
Right. It wasn't. The cafeteria they have now, I didn't have when I was here 5 years ago. But I think that, you know, and we always talk about the Patriots, but they do have that hotel in their parking lot, which is why they can have camp right there. Those guys stay in the parking lot at the hotel right there.
Where's that? The other side of
the other side of the stadium.
Yeah, it's just
there's,
right there on the
ground. There's a mall there, but there's a hotel. I'm pretty sure they walk from the hotel to the stadium.
Dress in the locker room there in the stadium.
Yep.
And then walk
out to their home locker room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see, and there's something to be said for having that routine where that locker room, and I go down now, the game day locker room the Bills use now was our everyday locker room throughout my career here. And it becomes so familiar.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you know, that's your living room.
That's home.
Yeah, it's home. I mean, you spend more time in that room than any place anytime, anywhere. You spend more time there than any, even in your car, in your house.
Yeah.
You're more in that room than any other room in your life. It's important to have that room correct. Yeah.
What about one more training camp question? We got a call on the line for you, Steve. This is for both of you. What about practicing with fans on hand? And at Fisher, at Bills camp, that has been a big part of it. They don't get huge crowds, but they do get crowds. And I've seen training camps, you know, Steelers a couple of years ago, where there are thousands of people there every day. Does that add to the training camp experience, detract from it? Do you think it's a distraction as far as the coaching staff is concerned to have fans on hand watching practice?
I think from my standpoint, it wasn't a distraction. The only thing that it was like, oh, man, we got to go sign autographs after practice. And that was like part of your duty, you know. You had to go sign autographs, and you wanted to just go get dressed, shower, get dressed, and go eat and take a nap. Well, now you got to sign these autographs. But for the when you're on the field, you should be focused on everything that's going on the field. You shouldn't be paying attention to fans or any of that stuff. So if you had that issue, I don't know if you can last in this league because you're going to play in front of 80,000 fans on Sundays.
Yeah, I think every practice should be closed. Because if you don't close them, you know that every AFC East team is going to be there filming it. Why would you give that up? You know, and a lot of teams do. They all have, you know, because of them, you know, they want the fan interest. They close the practice. If they want to see us, come watch us on game day. Because if you do open up practices, there's going to be other teams there filming and scouting. Yeah. And I think that's a bad thing to do.
Is there a league rule where you can't do that?
If you open
camp?
It to the public, scouts that's it. Scouts come in.
Yeah. But are there any teams that close off all of their practices in training camp?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Nobody does.
And that's like a holdover of the old pro football when they needed – summertime interest, you know, they needed to generate.
Oh, they're trying to grind it out. Yeah, they're trying to drum up ticket sales, you know. And listen, in this day and age, I don't, you know, ticket sales are not the huge part of the in revenue pie revenue, that they right. were when that was. They were the sole. This sole mm-hmm. revenue that sure. the team's got now, it's not that big a percentage of the pie. So I don't know that that's
– yeah.
And I get it. It's PR and it's sales. And every team does it. It's not like the Bills. And I don't know that – you know, the Bills have always been, particularly here, criticized for how much they market the team and how much yeah. access they give people. But that's pretty standard across the league.
You know, look at it from the reverse of it. If you close off all of the practices during training camp, now that thirst grows for fans to come and see preseason games, which we know a lot of people don't come to see those preseason games, and then to see the regular season games. You'll sell more tickets because it's like, man, I still haven't been able to see my team.
Right.
But if you go to see practice, now, okay, I know this guy. This guy should be starting because he's having a good – no, close it all off. And now it's like I have to go to a game because I want to see what they have.
Yeah, no, I disagree with both. I do think there's a good connection to be established between the players and the fans, that a lot of it takes place in training camp. And even your mandatory autograph sessions. Mm-hmm. You know, and you look at the setup at Fisher, I was just talking to another NFL executive a couple weeks ago. Fisher, as far as proximity from fans to on the field, is probably as good as it gets in the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, you are in Grounding Stadium. You can almost reach out and touch players. You don't get any closer to NFL action than you do at training camp.
It's an absolute home run. For that, in that respect, it's an absolute home run. No question about it. They do it. A phenomenal job there. It's a great setup. It's a great stadium for it. It's just the right size. And the facilities are in the proximity to each other. The mm-hmm. dorms, the training room, the weight room, the practice fields, all of it is right there. It's a home run facility-wise for the Bills. And let's face it, the former owner, you know, footed the bill for a lot of it. Ralph was very instrumental in pouring money into that facility, making it just the way the Bills wanted. There's a couple of buildings over there that have Ralph C. Wilson all over.
Sure. Here's a call from Tony and Clarence. Tony, go ahead. You're on the air with us. Good afternoon.
Yeah, Steve, could the K-Gun have worked without the line calls that Ken Hall made? And he was there for 10 years from 86 to 96. I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. He made all those calls. I mean, the K-Gun would not have worked. No huddle offense would not have worked without Ken Hall. I think he was one of the best leaders that the Bills have ever had, and his unfortunate death at the age of 50 is a real shame. What do you think about what I just said?
I agree with you completely, Tony. I think you're right on the money. I think he was a big reason that team was able to go to four Super Bowls. You asked the guys that played with him and around him and who depended on him, and you won't find anybody who would disagree with what Tony just said. He was one of the smartest, hardest working guys. He was incredibly intelligent and articulate, and was ahead of the game. As far as centers go in the NFL, he was a lot was put on his shoulders because of this pace that our offense ran. Our Hall of Fame quarterback, and I laugh, you know, I tell people this and they laugh, and it's really true. Kent's the only guy that had the power to call Jim off a play. Everybody could try to, and, you know, the coaches staff say, hey, don't run that. And Jim would say, you know, give him the raspberry, like, I'm running it. But Kent would sit down, turn around and look at him in the eye and shake his head.
Nah, and Jim, not running that.
It would, and Jim, in a moment, would change the play. He wouldn't even question Kent. And that's the only guy in the organization who had the power to do that, and it was Kent. And Jim, you know, Jim loved him for it, and so did all of us. And we miss him greatly.
Thanks for your call, Tony. We're going to take a break. We got more to talk about with Steve Tasker when we return. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back. Just a couple of minutes left with Steve Tasker. Steve, thanks for coming in. We want to get you in on the on the Twitter poll today, which deals with camp, 9 days away. We're going to spend the next few days leading up to camp addressing some of the key issues. And we started today with the defensive backfield for the Bills, with three new starters at least in the secondary. Today's camp countdown question, who's the key man in the Bills' defensive backfield? That's our Twitter poll. More than 1,700 votes in on our Twitter poll. It's fairly close. The new safety, Micah Hyde, so far folks consider him the key man back there. 32% say the returning corner, third-year man Ronald Darby. 27% say Tre'Davious Wright, the rookie first-round pick. 4% say somebody else. And you can interpret the key man any way you want, Steve. The best player, the most important player. Yeah. I guess I look at it as the guy who really needs to come through for that unit to have a successful year. What do you think?
I think it's probably Micah Hyde, only because it's, to me, as much pressure is put on corners and, you know, the number matching up with the number one receiver and that kind of thing, I think it's a safety league now. Safeties are so incorporated into it. You've got corners, and everybody seems to need to have one of those guys. But even if you don't have a shutdown corner, it only gets you in trouble if the team has more than one big threat. Because if they have a big number one guy, you're gonna have two guys on him anyway. Right. And a shutdown corner theoretically means you can put that corner on their number one guy and forget about the matchup because you're going to win it. Those guys don't happen very much. So you're going to have to double-team him anyway. So the corners, you don't have to have a shutdown corner to have an effective defense, but you do have to have safeties to make sure the right guy is doubled and the right tendencies are known. Because so you know that, and I don't get all X's and O's, but the safety's going to look at formations and personnel and say, okay, this is what they're in. This is what they're lined up in. I got to look out for this guy in this formation and this personnel package. So I'm going to make sure the coverage and the, you know, he knows that stuff, and he's the one who communicates that with the defense. That's why he's so important. It's a safe, in my opinion, safeties have become much more important in the last decade of the National Football League history because of the sophistication and what they're asked to do.
Is it also because of how good the tight ends are and being able to flex out now and run routes?
Yeah.
And those guys are usually the guys that are covering these tight ends.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, but they also drop down and they could drop down into the box if they need to, but they also, they're over the top of everything. And if they're, and even if they're not covering the guy, they got to make sure they who is, and they got to make checks. They got to make they got to watch the motion, and they got to watch the personnel packages, and then they also got to make sure the linebacker is the right linebacker on the right tight end if they're not covering him. But mostly, safeties don't go one on one with whoever they're at. They're a helper,
yeah,
and they're also a guy who covers mistakes. And that's, if you've got a guy that can do that, that's what Micah Hyde, that's what they need him to be, is a guy who is an eraser back there and covers all the mistakes.
And Steve, we talked about how we're just, 9 days away from the Bills' first training camp practice, and we are just a little bit more than 2 weeks away from the first preseason game, and you're on the preseason broadcast, right?
Yeah.
Again? You got the first game, Minnesota?
We got all four.
All four?
Yeah, I think yeah, Andrew Catalone's going to do three of the games, and I think Stone is going to do the first one.
Minnesota. Buffalo, 2 weeks from Thursday.
Are you ready? Yeah, it'll be great. it's great. It's preseason's fun.
It is fun.
I mean, the hardest part is, getting the rosters laid out so you can have access to it. But also, you go over there and you watch training camp and you watch these guys, and it's just something special about stepping up the first time you get to that first preseason game. Yeah, it's preseason. There's 6,000 guys on the field, and but you know what? The Bills come out in those red helmets and those blue jerseys, and they look shiny, man. Yeah. It is awesome, And Tyrod's there, and Shady's there, and Richie Incognito's there, and Sammy Ball. It's like hey, where you guys been? It's awesome to see. It's fun. I mean, that's when it's really exciting.
And it's the ultimate reality TV show for guys trying to make the roster or right? I mean, it's real. It's American Idol times 100.
I don't mean life and death, but lives are in the balance.
Yeah.
Dreams are in the balance. Lifelong quests for these guys are on the table. And a lot of these young guys who are gifted and smart and articulate and guys you love, guys you'd like to have your daughter date, wonderful guys who have worked hard, and they are pushing their chips to the front of the table. It's compelling.
Yeah.
It's dramatic, and it's important. And to see guys who have dedicated their lives to do this that they've grown up watching, and to see them in a split second have a chance to prove it all right. It's pretty fun. And I get emotional talking about it.
I know. You got me excited about it. I can't wait. I love preseason.
Look at that. Now you're pumped up.
Yeah, I love preseason for everything you just mentioned.
You can't understate the emotional roller coaster that these players go through. I remember I tell people this, and I've talked about this for a long time. When I was a rookie, I got drafted in the ninth round, 226th player taken, and three of us were taken at wide receiver by the Houston Oilers. And I remember thinking this, it happened to me 100 times over the course of the 3 or 4 weeks of camp. One moment, you think, man, I'm going to make this team. I'm going to be an NFL player. Literally 5 seconds later, like, man, I'm wasting my time. There is just no way.
Man.
And then 5 seconds later, I got a chance to get that. And, you know, really, literally, less than a minute later, you're like, I wonder what I'm going to do when I get cut tomorrow. And what's going to happen? I mean, it is,
you believe it every day.
With every fiber of your being. You believe both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable the mental roller coaster and the physical roller coaster you go through every day, up and down, moment to moment. It's just exhausting.
Don't have a bad play. If you have a bad play, you're like, oh, I'm getting cut. Get that many plays.
You almost get so despondent, you want to walk off.
Right.
Like, I ain't kidding. I'm done. It was a waste, you know?
Before we let you go, Luke with Hamilton, how's that going? They're in the
season. Man, it's a rebuilding year, man. They're 0-3. They've lost by double digits all three games. They've already had a bye week. They've got a game Thursday night. I'll be up there for that.
In Hamilton?
Yeah. Luke, week three, which was their second game, it's the only game, 52 games he's played up there, he didn't have a catch, and only had like one target. This last game he had a nice little game, but, you know, it's a bummer. I've talked with him a couple of times, and he's staying positive, you know, like he's a good player and he's a good teammate and stuff, so he's kind of hanging into there. But I have been, and I went to Northwestern,
mm-hmm.
and we were 0-34 before we won a game. You know, I was only there for the 0-31, 32, and 33. You know, I was over there for 0-32, 0-33, and 0-34. That was when my career started.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been on some bad football teams, and I know what it is to struggle. I was on the A. I was on the Bills when Mar first got here. We won only a couple of games in 8 games.
Yeah.
So I know how it is to try and get it together. We've been talking a lot.
Just checking my calendar. Do we all have this date down for
yes,
Friday, September 15th? Are you going to be there? Saskatchewan, Naaman Roosevelt at mm-hmm. Hamilton Ticats.
Well, I saw they were in Saskatchewan 2 weeks ago. That's where Luke got no targets. He was playing against Naaman and those guys.
Okay,
Naaman must have went off.
Naaman did. He had a nice game.
Yeah,
very nice game.
I
think he found a spot there in Saskatchewan. Naaman can play. That's his spot.
He's been going off.
He's doing really well. They got a nice and Saskatchewan is one of the iconic franchises they're all iconic because they've been around for over 100 years. All of them. But Saskatchewan has an enormous following up there.
Mm.
They are an enormous following in Saskatchewan. Great, a big stadium,
new stadium.
They fill it up. It's fun.
Do you have your CBS schedule yet? Do you have a game that week?
I won't get my schedule with CBS
for
months.
We are going.
And the crew here, we're going to do a limo bus. I think.
Oh yeah. I'll be there.
Donald's paying for everybody.
Text me. We'll have
a rookie.
We'll have a barbecue.
Not a rookie anymore.
They got great sandwiches there in the East End Zone, West End Zone, Tim Hortons Field.
They have Timbits there at the concession.
You got a lot. You can get a cup of coffee. I know that.
We're there, right? We're going.
There.
You got to hook up. Yeah, we'll have a pop or something
right.
at the game.
Steve, thanks.
All right, guys.
Steve Tasker joining us in studio, making our plans for Canadian football this fall. As if we don't see enough football. But no, I want to go to this. I really want to go and see this. Thank you, Steve. Coming up next, what's going on in Carolina? What's the deal with Dave Gettleman? We'll talk with Jim Zocchi, part of the Carolina Panthers radio broadcast team, when we return. John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Now the update from One Bills Drive, where the Bills are just about a little bit more than a week and a half away from getting set for training camp. In fact, the first training camp practice is 1 week from this Thursday. NFL teams getting set to make their moves to training camp. Only 11 of them move off-site now for their training camp locations. Yesterday, the Washington Redskins did not sign quarterback Kirk Cousins to a long-term deal, setting the stage for his possible departure from the team next offseason. They were looking to sign him to a long-term deal right after the draft. Washington says they made him an offer that included the highest fully guaranteed amount upon signing for a quarterback in NFL history, $53 million. Cousins declined, and because they could not come to an agreement by the deadline 4 p.m. yesterday, They cannot negotiate a long-term deal until after the season is over. That means Cousins will become the first NFL quarterback to play under the franchise tag for a second consecutive season. In Carolina, many still scratching their heads on the dismissal of Dave Gettleman, the general manager of the Carolina Panthers. That happened yesterday as well. Several, at least a couple of former Carolina Panthers went on record on Twitter, essentially expressing their delight that Gettleman was dismissed from the Panthers. More on that coming up on the show in just a minute or two. Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott is going to appeal his misdemeanor conviction of a traffic violation, a speeding ticket, all in the wake of what a source says was his involvement in an incident at a Dallas bar on Sunday. Dallas police say no suspects or arrests have been reported in connection with that case. Elliott, already under league investigation stemming from a domestic violence accusation from 2016. Ezekiel Elliott of the Dallas Cowboys. And the Buffalo Bisons play again tonight, trying to stay in the win column. Second game of their series in Columbus against the Clippers. 6:05 first pitch tonight for the Bisons. Last night, the Bisons returned to the win column, beating the Clippers 7-5 in Columbus. Chris Rowley, the Bison starter, went six innings, allowed just four base hits and a walk. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy and Donald Jones from our One Buffalo studio in beautiful Orchard Park. Joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a guy who's become a familiar visitor to our show over the last several months because of what the Bills did, hiring Sean McDermott, hiring Brandon Bean, and now we want to talk to him about the Panthers in general. Happy to have Jim Zoki, who is a part of the Carolina Panthers radio broadcast team. He is a color analyst on the Panthers radio broadcast and does some play-by-play as well for them, to talk about yesterday's firing of Dave Gettleman. Jim, John Murphy and Donald Jones here. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Murph, Donald, always a pleasure to be with you guys. They're at Carolina Northeast, our satellite location.
Yeah, that's right. A head scratcher, I think, for most of us yesterday with the Gettleman news. Were you surprised by that, Jim? Were close observers of the team surprised by that?
Yeah, I think a lot of people were surprised. I felt a little bit better when I heard out that Coach Ron Rivera didn't know about it till Monday morning. So I felt like I wasn't so behind the eight ball on that one, right. But. Yeah, it was in general, and when you look at the body of work, which was 4 years, the first three were division championships and a Super Bowl appearance, then last year the fallback to 6-10, but they've done a lot of encouraging things this offseason to kind of retool that, and a lot of excitement about this upcoming season still. People didn't see it coming, but that's the thing about Mr. Richardson, is that he's a very smart businessman, but he also takes his business very personally, and we'll talk about that, but I think the personal side got to involved in this in terms of some past players and some current players who are up for contracts. I think that's probably the mitigating issue here.
Which current players are up for contracts?
They're actually not technically up for contracts, but it hinted loudly, Greg Olsen, who's got 2 years left on his deal, that you know he's been essentially the best tight end in the league the last 3 years, and he's being paid seventh best and 12th in guaranteed money. And then Thomas Davis, who's got 1 year left on his contract. Both of these are, you know, favorites of Jerry Richardson, and you know, Dave Gettleman was brought in to kind of watch that salary cap. He inherited a team that was in the hole in the salary cap. He had to work their way out of it. He's pretty tight with the purse strings, so I think that was, again, the way that was probably going was that they weren't going to see extensions, so it'll be interesting to see what does happen with those two players, but I know those are two veteran favorites of Mr. Richardson's that probably at least, again, I don't think that's the whole deal. But the kind of thing that's currently going on that maybe has something to do with yesterday.
Jim, I'm curious. This is curious to me because, a couple of things. When I hear about players cheering on a general manager being dismissed, to me that's a red flag. Because I guess maybe this is old school, but don't you want – somebody has to be the bad guy, right? Somebody has to be the guy that says no when it comes to money or contracts. And you're kind of verging on, you know, the inmates running the asylum if you just do what the players want to do all the time. Donald's glaring at me now. but I believe that. I think that. What
the
do you think?
The GM does have to be that guy because the coach,
be the bad guy.
Ultimately, the coach wants these guys.
Yeah.
And Dave Gettleman would agree with you. And I think he was basically guys doing what he was hired to do because that had to be done. I mean, when you're cutting salary, that means you're not cutting the guys at the bottom of the roster. You're cutting some red meat there. You're cutting some guys that still have some football life left in them. And with Steve Smith and D'Angelo Williams – and they made some of these moves, and some of them were money, and some were personality. Josh Norman came down to money, but you got nothing in return for Josh Norman, and you got nothing back for Steve Smith, and you got nothing back for these guys. John Beeson, they traded for a seventh-round pick to the Giants a couple years ago. So these are starters, and you're not getting any return on the investment when you're making these roster decisions. So there were some bumps as far as maybe the way things were done, maybe abruptly, that maybe you could have gotten a little bit more return. And, yeah, he was the bad guy as far as, you know, tough job coming in and trying to get a team that was took 2 years to get out of salary cap trouble. He did that, and they were successful in winning. So it's kind of, you can see both sides. If you're a lawyer, you could argue the fact on behalf of Mr. Gettleman, they were winning, they were successful, he did what he was told to do. And then on Mr. Richardson, well, what kind of a place are we running? Is it a cutthroat place where former players want nothing to do with it, and some of our current stars may not finish their careers here because they're not going to get the money they want?
You know, I was covering this team 16 years ago, Jim, when the late, great John Butler, in one day, same day, cut Bruce Smith, Andre Reed, and Thurman Thomas, all of them Hall of Famers. Same day. John Butler agonized over that. He knew how great those players were. He probably knew they were going to be Hall of Famers. But because of the cap, because of financial considerations, because of where they were in their careers, it was probably the right thing to do. But that's what I think that's what GMs do, make those difficult decisions. Am I wrong about that?
No, you're right. It is a decision. And it's the kind of thing, if you want to go back a few years, that got Marty Herney in trouble in reverse as the GM, is that he fell in love with his players to the point where he was maxing out contracts, and we got into salary cap problems. So Marty, like Dave, both of them really assembled the Super Bowl 50 team. They both had a big hand in the personnel that was there. But the way Marty did it was he gave five-year max contracts to a lot of players, and that didn't leave any room, in fact, to put them in such a position they couldn't add players to it after a certain point. So neither one works perfectly. So it's a tough line to balance. It's a tough job to have, and we've seen two teams, Kansas City and Carolina, part with their GMs over the past couple weeks.
Yeah, it's crazy because, you know, he was brought in to really fix the whole salary cap situation. You get back into salary cap trouble when you're paying guys like a Greg Olsen. I understand Greg Olsen has been one of the best tight ends, you know, in the league for some time, but you don't always get paid, and you really shouldn't get paid for what you've done in the past. I don't know how much time Greg Olsen has left, but if you start paying all of these guys max contracts because they're your favorite guys, well, you find yourself in trouble in salary cap space.
Yeah, we've lived that lesson. I think the one that you can really point to where he did mess up and it cost the Panthers was the Josh Norman situation, because Josh was ready to do what Kirk Cousins and Le'Veon Bell did yesterday, which was sign a franchise of 1 year. Did he drag his feet a little bit? Yeah, but they called him and said it's off the table and no negotiating. And Josh Norman's agent called to accept the franchise tag after that, and they wouldn't accept him coming back, and he becomes a Washington Redskin a few days later after that. Well, when you've got a Super Bowl team coming off a Super Bowl season and your goal is to get right back there again the next year, starting two rookie corners, neither of which were first-round draft choices, is not really the formula when you've got an all-pro corner walking out the door with nothing in return. So that wasn't the whole thing last year, but that really got last season off to a rocky start personnel-wise in terms of trying to get back to where they were, which was a Super Bowl team that went 15-1, ended up going 6-10.
We're on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with Jim Zocchi. He is a radio analyst, color analyst on the Carolina Panthers Radio Network, sports director at WBT Radio in Charlotte. One of the things that people remarked on yesterday, Jim, was the timing of it. You know, people said that when Doug Whaley was let go here the day after the draft. Right now, I don't know when the optimal time is to fire a general manager or to make that switch. I think I could listen to arguments for either way. You know, maybe you could argue that the job of a general manager by the time you get to training camp is you know, 75% complete during the course of a year. What do you think about the timing of it?
I think it's not ideal, but it's not the worst either. Like, we're not in the middle of the draft or free agency. I think those would be much worse times when you're assembling new personnel. You've got 90 guys to pick from right now, and obviously the coaching staff will have maybe at this time a heavier say. And we still have over a week till training camp, so we don't know what the GM position looks like. Will there be an interim next week that'll be on for a period of time or a season, or will they flat out find the next guy who will be the general manager for the long term? So I don't think Ron Rivera's going to have to navigate this by himself. And they also have, you know, Don Gregory, Mark Kuntz, guys who've been around for a long time in the organization as evaluators that are still here, are basically the underlings, if you will. Obviously, if Brandon Bean were still here, he would be the most obvious choice to become the next general manager. So that didn't time up well in that Brandon left and was basically the heir apparent. to Dave Gettleman here. So he's got the job in Buffalo, and there's no going back on that, which makes me get back to the Greg Olsen, Thomas Davis thing. Why would you do it then? Because you're not pulling the trigger right before training camp because of alumni dissatisfaction. There were some things coming down the road, Trey Turner and some other contracts they've got to be wondering about, that maybe there was some differing of opinion about how those were going to be handled.
Now, you talked about Ron Rivera, and he was essentially blindsided by this as well. I mean, what's his thought process now? He's lost his defensive coordinator. He lost Brandon Bean, who was in waiting for this job, and now he lost the GM and Dave Gettleman. I mean, he has to be just like, I don't know what's going on right now.
Yeah, and, you know, Donald, I think, like, when you were a player, what did you do? You showed up and you played, right? You practiced.
Yeah.
I think he shows up and coaches the team and lets somebody else worry about what the front office looks like. And, by the way, Sean McDermott, great coach. Steve Wilks had a lot of years of tutelage and training, basically was on the job training to become the defensive coordinator in the eventuality that Coach McDermott became a head coach in the league, and it happened. So I think that's going to be seamless. I think there's a philosophy that will continue with how they play defensive football here. The front office, we don't know what it looks like. I would assume Mr. Richardson's been in business a lot of decades, that he didn't just fire the GM. He's got something in mind, and they just haven't announced it yet. All that's happened so far is a press release. So we don't know. Maybe they've already got that person in mind, or they've got a list of 2, 3, 4 people that they're happy with, and they know they can pull from that pool, maybe promote from within, whatever the case may be, that they'll be able to fill that situation with what they've got. So we'll see. And Danny Morrison left as team president at the end of last season. They didn't replace him. Without a team president, what they did was take a by-committee approach of other department heads, if you will, that are within the organization that kind of have absorbed a lot of that work. So we may have a president again at some point, or they may continue at this by-committee approach, and maybe that's how they handle some of this personnel, is by a Panther team committee for the time being.
Live on the line with Jim Zocchi, who is the Carolina Panthers radio network analyst, talking about yesterday's dismissal of Dave Gettleman, the general manager. Jim, I read some speculation that in losing Brandon Bean to the Bills back in early May, I believe it was, in losing Brandon Bean, that Gettleman may have lost somebody who had a skill set that he didn't possess. In other words, Gettleman was a great scout, good talent evaluator, but maybe Brandon Bean, and maybe even some of these other names you just mentioned, kind of helped him through some of the other issues that a general manager has to navigate. Is that accurate? Does that sound like it resonates a little bit with you?
Yeah, I think, you know, as Dave Gettleman goes, I mean, this is a guy who's just happy in the film room, and he is a scout at heart, and not, as we say, the bedside manner was missing. And I think guys like Brandon Bean rounded out the rough edges, so to speak, as far as not the PR, but just kind of the speaking and dealing with that. You know, when Marty Herney was here, he was doing weekly radio interviews and shows like that. Dave Gettleman did twice a year. And that was just his way. He was a nice enough guy and pleasant as far as that part of it goes. But it was not his interest to be in front of the microphones, in front of the cameras as a public speaker. He did it when he had to before the draft and at certain times of the year. But Brandon Bean, Mark Kuntz, Don Gregory, some of these other folks helped to kind of round that stuff around it. And, you know, these guys are football guys at heart, and speakers are just kind of something that comes with it, public speaking, and maybe internal speaking when it comes to players. We had a lot of guys like John Beeson and Steve Smith. It wasn't so much that they couldn't handle that they were let go. It was the way they were let go. It's that LeBron making the decision to go to Miami. It's not that you went to Miami. It's the way you handled the way you did that. And I think that's maybe where Dave Gettleman had some missteps.
Well, and that kind of gets me to what Donald and I had a brief conversation about this before the show. I wonder if we might be entering into a new era of expectations for NFL general managers. And I think about it in Doug Whaley's case, too, a pretty good scout, pretty good talent evaluator, who ran into problems when it come to communicating what he was thinking, what he was doing. Maybe he didn't do a good job of that, especially at the end of last season. John Dorsey, I think highly regarded in Kansas City, is a very good scout. And now Dave Gettleman. Maybe we're, as the league kind of evolving into, we need more than this from general managers. We don't just need a guy who can find football players.
I think as long as you're winning, you can get away with being whatever you want to be. And when the Panthers were winning for those first 3 years, Dave Gettleman, nobody talked about it. But you're right. When you go 6-10, all of a sudden everything gets looked at under a little bit different lens. So to answer your question, I think as long as you're successful, whatever it is you're doing is fine. But if you're not, I mean, look at Bill Belichick, who's who's less likable than Bill Belichick? But darn, they win the Super Bowl about every other year, don't they?
Right. Yep.
But if he was going 6-10, he probably would have been, you know, changing locations four or five times over the past 20 years.
Right. You're asking us in Buffalo who's less likable than Bill Belichick?
Yeah, right.
Come on. Who do you think?
Now, Jim, I want to get to, and this is the last question I actually have for you. I want to get to the team on the field. Talent-wise, does this team have what it takes to make another run for the playoffs? I mean, you're talking about a Falcons team that had a pretty good season last year and making that Super Bowl run, a Tampa Bay team that is on the rise with the talent that they have, a young team. And does Carolina have what it takes to make another run at it?
I do. I think they're definitely not going to be, unless, you know, again, catastrophe hits with the injuries, a 6-10 team again. And they've really addressed it. I mean, this is a team that's built for win now. They went out and went real veteran this year. They re-signed Charles Johnson, brought in Julius Peppers at defensive end, who's 37. They brought in Mike Adams, who's 36 years old, who'll be a starting safety. Captain Munnerlin is back from Minnesota, who's now in his early 30s. And then you got Jonathan Stewart, Ryan Khalil, Thomas Davis, Greg Olsen. I mean, it's just a team loaded with guys who are on the back half of their careers, maybe down to the last 2-3 years, but still playing good football. So it's not a super young team. They did draft well this year, it looks like. But this is a team that's built to win now, not on a five-year plan. So I think for this year they're good. And then they're going to have to address the fact that they've gone this route. They've kind of gone quick, short fix, veteran here. That it may be something where 2-3 years from now they may pay the price for it. But this was definitely shaping up as a win-now type season. That's what I expect out of them in 2017.
Hey, Jim, thanks for this. Thanks for spending time with us. We'll talk again soon. I appreciate it.
You got it. John and Donald, thank you.
Okay,
thank you.
Jim Zocchi, color analyst on the Carolina Panthers Radio Network, joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, talking about the surprising move. Not timing as much. I think the timing is okay. We were shocked yesterday, but, you know, what the GM's job is pretty much, you know, the cookies are in the oven for the 2017 Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, the only thing is just with camp coming up, I guess everybody else's job is to go out there and find other talent because – your guys are going to get cut the same time as everybody else's, and you're going to need to bring some guys in, you know, so or injuries, whatever.
We thank Jim for his expertise, and this does, you know, Brandon Bean is a factor here, and I want to read you a post that went up on the Panthers website from their in-house writer, Bill Voth. He wrote this yesterday, or maybe it was today. It was earlier today. When Brandon Bean left for Buffalo, he writes, Gettleman lost a key member of his team who had performed many day-to-day functions of a GM, a role that allowed Gettleman to focus on roster building in many ways. The fallout appeared similar to the stories that came out of Kansas City after the Chiefs parted ways with John Dorsey. I think GMs are being put in a very difficult spot in the NFL, and it's worth noting, and it might be a good trend, but it is worth noting what I asked Jim Zocchi about what appears to me to be a trend that as a GM, you are now required to be more than just the guy who can go to Texas Arlington and say that guy can play, that guy can help us. You know,
I mean,
you need to do more as a GM. You need to handle contracts. Obviously, that's always been part of the deal. And most teams have a contract guy, but you also need to be able to communicate what you're doing. And apparently in the Carolina instance, you need to keep the alumni happy to a certain extent. The owner's favorites.
The owner's favorites.
I hope that's
different
than that. Yeah.
I mean, that's just totally different. I understand that some owners and some organizations are loyal to their players and even their coaches sometimes. But at the end of the day, it's a business, you know, and guys are getting older. Do you want to pay guys max contracts, especially when you brought a guy in to get out of the money issues, financial issues that you were having, you know?
So, and he does that.
And that's what he does, exactly. So I hope that there's more to it and not just that, but you might be right. I mean, GMs are probably going to be asked to do a lot more than they were doing in the past. You can't just be a scout. You can't just be a scout and be in the film room and look for talent. We need you to handle contracts. We need you to handle the media the right way. We need you to handle all of the administrative stuff that comes along with this because the coach needs to be able to communicate with you and tell you these are the types of players that I need. And that really the coach just wants to coach the team. And I think that's what the owners want. The coach, it's your job to coach the team. The GM, it's your job to get the talent here, make sure that the contracts and everybody's happy. As the case down in Carolina, we need to make sure that everybody is happy. I guess they are being.
Everybody can't be happy, though.
I know.
Somebody's got to be the guy that says, no, somebody, and I'm not defending Gettleman here. I don't know the intricate details of what went down there, but somebody in the football department has to be the guy that said, no, we're not paying
we're
that.
Not paying
no,
that.
We're not extending that deal. No, we don't want him. We can get better at that position. Somebody's got to be the bad guy.
You're talking about a guy like Steve Smith, who they let go. I'm sure fan favorite.
Hall of Famer.
Hall of Famer. Everybody in Charlotte loves Steve Smith, including the owner, and probably including Dave Gettleman as well. But guess what? Just because I love you as a person doesn't mean that we can give you what you want in terms of money. We only have a certain amount of money that we can give guys. And I know Steve Smith wanted some money because he's Steve Smith. His ego and everything, I know he wanted some money. They just drafted Kelvin Benjamin. We got to do what we got to do. We got to move on and find younger guys. That's how the business has always worked. We got to find younger guys. At a certain point, we talk about it up in New England. Will Bill Belichick move on from Tom Brady? I would think he would. If you start to see a decline, we have to move on. You can't just fall in love with these guys and keep everybody around because they're your favorites.
Donald, I witnessed it firsthand, and it tore up John Butler in February 2001 to cut three Hall of Famers on the same day. Who does that?
That's
It's cold. And it was the right move to make at the time.
It was the right move to make, but it is cold. And when what was your thought when it first came down? You're probably like,
I thought John Butler has some serious, gigantic nerve to do that.
To do it all in one day, at least do it consecutively.
It was the league year was starting, and you knew it was going to – you knew it was coming. You kind of knew it was coming. It wasn't shocking, but it was shocking in retrospect, even when you think of now all three of them in the Hall of Fame.
See,
but you need a guy to do that.
You have to have a guy that thinks about – because here's the thing. The coaches want these guys. You know, the coaches love these guys too. They're kind of like – teammates, the coaches are coaching them every day. You're in the locker room. You're in the meeting rooms with these guys every day. You love these guys. The GM usually doesn't – I mean, he has to come downstairs and evaluate, but he's not in the locker room, in the meeting room with these guys. You're upstairs making business decisions, you know, and the coach is not making business decisions. And so, you need a guy to say no. You need a guy who's a bad guy, and that's usually the GM.
Yeah, fascinating, I think, what went down in Carolina yesterday. Thanks to Jim Zocchi for talking with us about it. A little bit more on this coming up next in Fake News, Real News. In particular, the timing of it. Is the timing wrong to fire a general manager in July, a week or week and a half before training camp begins? We'll talk about that when we return. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones coming to you live from One Bills Drive. Just took a look outside. It is maybe the nicest day of the year, man. It's unbelievable.
You sure you're not going to get any more golf in?
Oh, no, I'll get some in. Yeah, okay. Not like the golf orgy that went on for a couple of, couple of days there on vacation. That was ridiculous. Even I got sick of it. Hey, our Twitter poll today, let's revisit that. 9 days, believe it or not. I'm looking forward to camp. When you see a day like this, this would be great to be outside of camp doing the show. We're 9 days away, 8 days away, really, from our first shows at training camp a week from tomorrow. 9 days away from the first training camp practice. Our camp countdown question today, who's the key man in the Buffalo Bills defensive backfield? Got a lot of traction on this, almost 2,000 votes. 38% of you, it's close, but 38% of you on Twitter say Micah Hyde, the new safety. 32% say third-year cornerback Ronald Darby is the key man back there. 27% say the first-round pick, Tre'Davious White. 3% say somebody else. You got time to ring us up, give us a call, let us know what you think. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. And a defensive backfield with a lot of new faces, three new starters at least. Who's the key man back there? I think I settled on Hyde. Who did you?
You settled on Hyde. I settled on Hyde as well.
Yeah.
I think Steve did as well. Now, here's a question I have for you. At the anywhere, does Sharice Wright have anything to say? Because, you know, he's a veteran, that a savvy veteran. You know, he's bounced around a little bit, but he does know what he's doing. I think he wants to come in here and at least challenge for some playing time, at least at the nickel spot. You know, so
yeah. Oh, I think he'll be heard from. I think
he definitely will be heard.
In fact,
if
I were picking I haven't done it yet. Maybe I will when we get to camp. Picking a 53-man roster, I think he's on my 53.
He's on the 53.
Don't you think?
I would think so.
I would think so. He's a backup. You need depth. You need corners.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a call here from South Carolina, Jason in South Carolina. What's on your mind today, Jason?
Hey, how y'all doing today?
We're doing great.
Good. Hey, I got a couple questions. I think in the defensive backfield, I'm looking at Darby. I think he has a little bit to prove. But the questions I have today are a little bit off base. Who's our kicker this year?
Our kicker?
Yeah.
Steven Hauschka.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And what happens if he goes down?
Well, Steven Hauschka is the kicker right now. I mean, you know, it's rare that kickers go down, but
when
you
do,
have
they always have a list of guys ready to.
Yeah, you have a list of guys, but you also do have a rookie that can kick and punt, you know, and we'll see more of him once we get into training camp. So
Austin Rico.
Yeah, Austin Rico. He'll be battling with Colton Schmidt, at least for that punt role, the punter role.
Yep.
And he can kick as well, so there you go.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Chuck in Williamsville. Hello, Chuck. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, just curious what you guys' thoughts were on the other safety spot. I mean, Micah Hyde seems like he's pretty good. You know, I mean, hoping for a bounce back here from Darby, Tre'Davious White, all these other guys. I mean, the other safety spot, this is a really big question mark for me, and I'm not too sure how I feel about it because, I mean, what's Jordan Poyer and, you know, why was he brought in? I mean, is there some type of defense that McDermott runs where it's just, you know, a single safety high or something like that, that, you know, Micah Hyde's just going to be the main guy? I'm just a little curious about all that.
No, I think they're gonna start off in a lot of cover two shell, and then they're going to rotate into two different defenses, my understanding of this defense. But, you know, Jordan Poyer, don't sleep on Jordan Poyer. I think he's a good enough player. He came over from Cleveland, so nobody really knows about him. But when I've had a chance to watch those two together, they made a lot of plays in the spring. So I think Jordan Poyer can end up being a good guy. Right now, he's the guy.
He's the starter.
Yeah.
In pencil. He, you know, what I'm not saying I'm scared, but what you look at him and you think he doesn't have the physical stature that you'd like from a safety. On the other hand, he appears to run well and appears to be just about as athletic a guy as you might want back there.
Yeah,
you know, not a superstar, but
I think he's going – when they rotate and you have a single high safety, he's going to be that guy. And Micah Hyde is going to be down in the box.
Yeah.
And I think his job is to be rangy, you know, cover the back end and don't let anybody get deeper than you and be able to go sideline to sideline and catch interceptions. So, you know, his stature doesn't really bother me. I think Micah Hyde is the guy who's going to be down in the box making tackles a lot more.
In a way, that role you described for Poyer might be, I'm not going to say easier, but more manageable than what Micah Hyde would be asked.
Yeah.
Hyde's going to have to be versatile, come down and cover slots.
Right, exactly.
And get down and run
support.
Help out
the run, right.
Yeah.
You know, so that's Micah Hyde's job. And that's really what he did out in Green Bay as well. You know, Jordan Poyer, his job is to really be, you know, somewhat of the quarterback of the back end, you know.
The deep safety.
Right. He's the free safety. We need you to be rangy. The ball, you know, we go into a cover three, the ball goes up. We need you to be able to get to that sideline. That's his job. So his stature at 6 foot, you know, 190 plus pounds, I think he'll be all right back there.
Good question. Thanks for calling. We'll continue this discussion as we work through the rest of the show. We do want to get to our segment we call Fake News, Real News, as we try to identify some of the fake storylines. There's so much fake news out there. We try to call out fake news when we see it here. It's brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. Going back to Dave Gettleman for a moment, Fake News, Real News. Some people got hung up on the timing. What, a week and a half, a week before training camp? Why do you fire a general manager now? Fake or real, it's okay to fire an NFL general manager in July. Fake, real? I think firing Dave Gettleman is a mistake and a bad call, but as far as the timing, I guess it's okay to fire him in July. I'll go real on this. And, you know, as I said, by this point of the offseason, 75% of a general manager's work is done. You still have to cut your roster down. Most teams allow their coaching staff, I believe, to have the main say in forming the 53-man roster, making the final cut to 53. So, yeah, I guess it's okay to fire an NFL GM in July. It's not what we're used to seeing. I mean, the Bills were questioned for firing Doug Whaley right after the draft back in April and May, which caught some people as a little surprising. To me, that is the time when, you know, a GM's job, it's like when one job ends and the other begins year to year. So,
I mean, it's okay.
I'm okay with that. It's real.
I think I have to go real on this one as well. Yesterday, I think everyone was in shock, and it took us a night to really think about it. And then I think you and Steve kind of talked me off the ledge on this one earlier today.
About the timing?
The timing, yeah, because I still, even today, I was like, man, what? They really fired this guy right now?
Right.
But, yeah, like you guys say, like, right now, they've done all their work. Their team, in terms of draft and all of that stuff, is all done. Now, you do have camp coming up, and so, you know, you have to still be out there looking at the entire league and see who you need to still bring on your team because you're going to have injuries. But for the most part, your work has been done, you know, so I think it's okay to fire him right now. So I'll go real on that.
We'll go real. Fake news, real news. How about this one? Washington yesterday declined to get a long-term agreement in place with Kirk Cousins, their quarterback, who now plays on the franchise tag for the second consecutive year. Some people think that the tables have turned, that a year ago Cousins was on a prove-it year with the Washington team, and that apparently he did enough. Now some people think Washington has to prove it to Cousins that he should stick around. He's in a pretty good position, aside from the fact that he has no long-term security at the job. But is Washington now auditioning for Kirk Cousins as opposed to the other way around? Fake or real? I'll say real. I think Cousins now is on the, in the process of collecting for the second consecutive year really good quarterback money, no long-term guarantees. He made it through last year, probably, you know, taking a chance that he would, and his part, that he could do it again. But, yeah, I think Washington is auditioning for Cousins now to prove to them that they're serious about winning, that they want to keep him around, that they will surround him with the kind of talent to win in a, on a serious basis. Yeah, I would say that's real as well. What do you think?
I'm going to go real on this one as well. And I think if Washington wants to keep Kirk Cousins, they better get a deal done before the end of the season. If they allow him, or before free agency starts in March, if they allow him to hit free agency, he is out of there, you know, because you franchised him twice. You haven't been able to get the deal done. And if he comes out and he has somewhat of a good season, teams are already going to offer him a lot of money anyway. But if he has somewhat of a good season out there in Washington, teams will offer him, he will be the highest paid quarterback, you know, because somebody will offer him that because teams are so hungry or thirsty for a quarterback, for a franchise quarterback. Yeah. So if they allow him to hit free agency, he's done. So, yeah, I do think that the Redskins are auditioning, and they need to try to get a deal done before free agency hits.
The circumstances around Cousins have changed, it appears. You know, with Sean McVay is gone now, out coaching the Rams. They brought in Matt Kavanaugh to be the offensive coordinator. They've lost some big targets, Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson. Circumstances have changed around him. Maybe Washington won't be good enough to for Cousins to want to stay around and sign a long-term deal after this year. You know
so,
what I mean?
I mean, especially now, here's the thing. Another thing, if he goes out there because – who does he have now at receiver? They brought the receiver over from Cleveland.
Terrell Pryor.
Yeah, they brought Pryor over. If he has – that's really all he has now. And Josh Reed, the tight end. If he has a good season with not the same weapons out there, he's, I'm telling you, he's out of there. Like, he's really just going to be gone. And like you said, they won't be good enough. They seem like they're rebuilding somewhat down there. So he might just say, you know what, I'd rather go somewhere else. You haven't wanted to get a long-term deal done. We're not winning. I think I want to go somewhere else.
A lot of this goes to how good you think Kirk Cousins is, and we had this discussion yesterday. I want to cite Tom Pelissero wrote a piece for NFL.com, and he writes this, and this goes, how good do you think Cousins is? He writes, on Monday, I asked personnel executives from five teams that played the Redskins last season where they would rank Cousins among NFL quarterbacks. All five of them had him as a top 15 quarterback. Three put him in or on the border of the top 10. Small sample, as Pelissero admits. Is he a top 15 quarterback in the league? Yeah, I think he's right around there. By the way, I think Tyrod Taylor is right about in the mix there around 15 is, you know, where I would rank quarterbacks in the league. Tell me I'm crazy. Not only am I nuts.
I think Tyrod would be top 20. I think Kirk Cousins, because of his ability to
stand in the
pocket,
and make those throws.
You
always have to have the pocket quarterback.
That's what it is, you know.
I know.
Because he does make your offense a lot more balanced, you know, and right. I think you could put Kirk Cousins up there in the top 15.
You made a point. Did you say this yet about Cousins? What did you say earlier in the day? I don't know if we were on the air or not.
No, we were off the air. You know, Tyrod Taylor. All right, so the difference in Kirk Cousins and Tyrod Taylor. Kirk Cousins, you know, you might – if you brought Kirk Cousins here, you might not have the number one rushing attack in the league.
Right?
But you're still going to have a top 10 rushing attack in the league with Shady McCoy. If you brought Kirk Cousins here, you have a lot more balanced offense. You might not have the number one rushing attack, but you have a more balanced offense. With Tyrod Taylor, that makes you the number one rushing attack, but he just hasn't shown anything where he can be a lot more balanced, you know. So that's the biggest difference. It's not that Kirk Cousins is that much better than Tyrod Taylor. They do two totally different things. Right. Well, you know.
Really good point.
Right. You know, Kirk Cousins just makes it a little bit more balanced.
And if you look at it, I think from the Bills' perspective, they would say they are hoping, maybe betting to a certain extent, that Tyrod can become more balanced, lead a more balanced offense.
Yeah.
In the meantime, they're paying him about half as much as Washington's playing Kirk Cousins.
You know, if Tyrod Taylor can become a little more balanced, and still have that ability to get out of the pocket, I mean, he's a dangerous quarterback. Like Russell Wilson, you know, he showed I can throw from the pocket because he had to. He was hurt. You know, he couldn't really run last year, if you remember. And he showed I can throw from the – if Tyrod Taylor can do that, whew,
yeah,
he's dangerous.
Going into his third year as a starter, right. Tyrod. Actually, mm-hmm. Cousins is too, for the most part.
Yeah.
So, interesting to compare those two. And we had a caller, I think, yesterday who sounded incredulous that I mean, at this point, because of his upside, I would take Tyrod over Cousins. But it's a close call. I would say either one of them. If you're ranking quarterbacks in the league, they're going to be somewhere in the top 15 to 20, mm-hmm. maybe, you know, somewhere in that range.
Both of them are ranked around the same place,
yeah.
I'd say.
Yeah, and definitely. They're totally different players.
Right.
Interesting to watch that. All right, fake news, real news, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. Back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider, the Buffalo Bills. What have we learned from Steve Tasker, the Bills special teams ace, now with the NFL on CBS? Got into a long and lengthy discussion about culture building in the NFL. Here's what Steve had to say.
At that time in the NFL, if you played a long time, you were a leader by de facto. I mean, that was just the way it worked back then. And it didn't matter if you were a great player or that, because all the money was kind of the same. And, you know, so the old players were the leaders. That has completely changed. And that's when it began to change, when they got Bruce and Jim and Andre. And then they drafted Thurman and traded for Cornelius Bennett. Now in the league, and rightfully so now, it's not about the longevity. It's about who's the best player.
Steve Tasker on culture building. We really took a trip down that culture building road.
I'm
glad we did.
Because it's so big.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all. When Coach McDermott was hired, that's all we talked about was changing the culture and leadership and all of that stuff.
But you know what? That's what was talked about when Doug Marrone was hired, when Rex Ryan was hired. So we'll see. I'm not saying it can't happen. It needs to happen. You got to win.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Donald. Thanks to our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Our intercom board op today, Derek Kramer. Production assistants from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander. Also from Jess Pappas and Ryan Dukarn. That's your cue, Ryan. Our producer is Jay Harris. We're back tomorrow at noon with the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.